it is shown that he is slumping in key polls. He told Fox News,
"Bottom line, everybody in this room, we view that as a very unfortunate incident, okay?
Right.
Everyone,
right.
Unless you're a stupid person, very, very unfortunate incident."
Plus, the news they don't want to hear. Holocaust denial at the BBC. They refer to 6 million people being killed in the Holocaust and don't even mention it in the 6 o'clock news. Extraordinary decision there. Plus, the storm, Storm Chandra, the aftermath of that, and the true death toll in Iran, as the numbers are under dispute. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. Sir Keir Starmer will arrive in China later on the first visit to the country by a British Prime Minister since 2018. He's due to meet business leaders before talks with President Xi Jinping on Thursday. The Prime Minister has stressed the importance of rebooting Britain's relationship with China. Former Governor of Hong Kong, Lord Patton's told LBC, Sir Keir shouldn't be afraid of raising difficult issues.
If he doesn't raise the fact that a number of members of parliament are sanctioned by China, if he doesn't raise the Jimmy Lai case, he might as well have stayed at home. Of course, there are other things he has to do. We have to be realistic about dealing with them, but we do have to deal with them. But deal with them not by giving them what used to be called the mandate of heaven, by assuming that you can't criticise them without losing exports or losing other opportunities.
Hundreds of flood warnings are in place after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain across the UK. A major incident's been declared in Somerset, where around 50 properties flooded yesterday. Yellow weather warnings for ice remain in place for large parts of the country this morning. President Trump says his administration will de-escalate a little bit. In Minneapolis, there's been an angry response after two people were shot and killed by federal agents. The border czar, Tom Homan, will take over from the hardline patrol commander, Greg Bravino, in an attempt to ease tensions. Business leaders are urging ministers to extend business rates support beyond pubs and small music venues. Yesterday, the government confirmed plans to cut rates by 15% from April. It's after firms warned of closures and job losses after a COVID discount was removed in November's budget. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC the government is supporting the wider hospitality sector as well.
The £4.3 billion that we put in at the budget does help many hotels, restaurants and cafes, but also remember that small business rates relief means that the smallest cafes, coffee shops have never paid business rates.
And vets will have to publish price lists for common treatments under government plans to make the industry more transparent. They'll also have to disclose if they're independent or part of a chain. The competition regulator found pet owners aren't being given enough information about what they're paying for. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,207. It closed up 58 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and a euro 15. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. Showers for the west areas of the UK. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Wednesday, January the 28th. Accusations of just half measures with Rachel Reeves' latest turn, of course, on that pub issue. And we're going to hear more from the political editor who's interviewed Tasha Clark, who interviewed the Chancellor yesterday. In other news, is after Storm Chandra, it's Chandramonium.
Storm Chandra has disappeared, but dozens of towns and villages remain cut off. I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne with the latest.
Let's pick up on a story you heard on the LBC News Bulletin there about changes as regards vets fees after an extraordinary escalation, which has led to many of you taking out considerable loans. Animal Welfare Minister Baroness Hayman
The recent report that we've had from the Competition and Markets Authority has really drawn attention to the fact that households are spending so much more on veterinary services.
Talking about taking out loans, Sir Nick Clegg coming to see us in the next hour. Of course, behind the change in university tuition fees, and many of my colleagues here talking about eye-watering debt, tens of thousands of pounds in some instances, money they wonder if they will ever pay back. We will put that question to Sir Nick. He's here to talk about Brexit 10 years on. And in other news... Perhaps not quite in his hand, but China and trade in his grasp. Sir Keir Starmer off to Beijing, but many people should be asking, should we be cozying up to the Chinese? That's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The Chancellor yesterday attempting to undo the undoubted damage that her budget tax raid, as it was called, on pubs has done. But I'll use the expression again, many saying it's only half measures. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, spoke with the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, yesterday and joins me in the studio. What was she telling you? Morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so many pubs raising a glass to the Chancellor last night, Nick, after she announced that they would be getting 15% off their business rates from April, and the Treasury will look again at changing the way they evaluate their sums for them and for hotels in the future. Now, it all comes, of course, after those changes to business rates, the end of that COVID relief. It was due to collide in an eye-watering raise from April, and there was a huge backlash. We already know the number of pubs has fallen by 7,000 since 2010, basically one a day still closing. That's expected to continue. And Nick, as you say, I was with the Chancellor yesterday at a pub in southeast London. She poured one impeccable pint, Nick, and one with such a head on it, I definitely would have sent that back. Now, the announcement was very warmly welcomed last night. It's worth around £1,600 for the average pub next year, and we'll see their bills frozen for another 2 years. But of course, there are thousands of firms who will not benefit. This is only for pubs and it's only for England. But she told me that pubs were different and also partly blamed work from home.
Because of people's changing habits over the last decade, more working from home, less drinking in pubs. We're also announcing changes to the planning rules to enable pubs to diversify. Changes as well to licensing rules, including that during the Men's World Cup, pubs will be able to stay open later for home games in the later rounds of the tournament.
But she told me that it was right that they taper away that COVID support.
The £4.3 billion was a support for businesses that got extra support during pandemic, which was quite right. But it's also right that over time that support is tapered away because the cost of that pandemic era support can't continue forever.
But Nick, she didn't answer my question about whether this will be enough to see the ban on Labour MPs in some pubs lifted, or if she could guarantee that the rest of her budget is now safe. And Nick, some people say this package is far from enough. Here was the Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, yesterday saying this is nothing more than a sticking plaster.
Is that it? After all this time, after weeks of telling our local pubs that help was on the way, this is all they get. A temporary sticking plaster that will only delay the pain for a few, while thousands of businesses despair as their bills skyrocket.
And here was the celebrity chef Tom Kerridge speaking with our very own Tom Swarbrick.
I still think there'll be lots of people and lots of individuals that have their business rates will be going up. The rate of value has gone up. There will be more, you know, it's an increase, but not as big as the increase that it was going to be. There are other pubs that are, if their rateable value drops still below £100,000, they will be paying less. And I understand that, and that is a good news story. However, the much bigger picture is hospitality in general.
So will it be enough to stop those struggling boozers from shutting the door now? Well, yes, I think for now. Will other struggling firms like cafes face a really tough spring? Absolutely. And will the Chancellor have to come back again with more measures to soften the blow of these huge rakes? Quite possibly, Nick. Another partial U-turn, more political pain for the government. The Chancellor may be cheering today, but I think she might be drowning her sorrows in future.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, reporting, but it would appear, of course, to come too late for the owners of Revolution Bars. They're shutting 21 venues. A shadow under 600 jobs gone, 591 to be precise, nearly 600 jobs now as the whole chain is put into administration. Isn't that the reality? Well, let's speak to one of the architects of that famous ban.
Get out of my pub!
As put there by Peggy Mitchell from EastEnders, we turn to Andy Lennox, landlord at the old Thatch Pub in Dorset. Good to have you on. Andy, is this something to lift the spirits or is it small beer? Good morning.
Look, I don't think there's many loads of people celebrating across the nation last night. I will say the government have moved the dial a little bit. I think that is important to recognise. However, it's only for pubs and it's not for the hospitality sector. How do you define a pub against a restaurant? I think the problem we've got here is that, you know, the Chancellor has decided that she will put something in place, but it goes nowhere near enough to say the real problems that we have in our industry. The tax bill has still gone up, it just hasn't gone up as much.
You know, you asked it almost rhetorically, but how do you define? Can you draw the distinction for me? If I'm running a pub where I've got, I don't know, sausage rolls and a cheese sandwich on the bar, does that mean I'm serving food, or is it still open, really, to interpretation?
Well, ultimately, this is one of the things that we're going to start to challenge. Because, you know, from our point of view, I have restaurants and I have pubs. You know, how do you define the two? This ban started in a restaurant. The second one to take it on was myself, which was the pubs. And obviously, okay, don't get me wrong, the pubs have resonated with the nation, and that's really great. But you can't separate. It's they're trying to divide and conquer. If they give a little bit here, that big voice will disappear. That's not going to happen. We had a long conversation yesterday about what we would do about the ban. The ban's going to remain in place. We're now calling on more people to join that ban. We talk about engagement. Well, if Labour MPs had properly engaged, if the Chancellor had engaged with me, she would know that what I'm asking for and what we've always been asking for is a VAT cut in line with Europe at 13%.
Lastly, and I, unfortunately, we don't have the Chancellor, but we have one of her senior colleagues, and I am going to ask her this. Apparently, and one of my colleagues has been trying to dig into this since the early hours this morning, she understands that it's, quotes, where you can only drink. A pub is a place where you can only drink, i.e. not a gastropub. Does that help shed any light on it at all? Because it doesn't for me, but you're in the business.
No, not at all. And ultimately, they've sent out a load of guidance about, you know, and what you're going to have is, it's going to be quite funny, really, and, you know, we're going to help it. But you're going to have loads of people change their VOA rating. So if pubs have got help and restaurants haven't, well, I'll just change to my restaurant to a pub. You know, and that's what we're going to start looking at. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening now. You know, we did say to the Chancellor, we've given you the time and the space and less noise to be able to come up with a package that would actually help the industry. That sadly, and really sadly, not happened.
Good luck with the work you're doing. Andy Lennox, landlord at the Old Thatch Pub in Dorset, starting that Get Out of My Pub ban, which he says will stay in place. We will try and find out. For those of you who have listened to me for some time, it seems to me like the famous Scotch egg with Michael Gove. Do you remember that all those years ago when I asked him about that? And I still don't know what the answer was, serving a Scotch egg, but I think we might be going down that road yet again. So that's what's happening for the pubs, as I say again, small beer. But what about the restaurants, the hotels, the bars? Sasha Lord is an entrepreneur and chair of the Nighttime Industries Association, also served as nighttime economy advisor to Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham. Really out of the headlines. Sasha Lord joins me now. How are you interpreting it? Would you say it is rather half measures for this industry? Morning to you, Sasha.
Good morning, Nick. It's less than half, to be honest. And I think the easiest way to describe this to your listeners is at the budget she taxed pubs a couple of grand, and yesterday she gave us about 400 quid back. That's it, really. So we're still well out of pocket. But you're right, you know, this is just pubs, but one out of seven in this sector, where 3.5 million people work, actually work in pubs. So what about the other six out of seven that work in hotels, restaurants, small independent cafes, things? They've been completely neglected. And I absolutely categorically agree with Tom Swarbrick. I was listening to his show yesterday when he interviewed Tom Kerridge. And yes, she will make another U-turn before the April budget. She has to, because we are predicting six closures a day in 2026, which is absolutely heartbreaking.
591 jobs probably gone with the revolution closures or going into administration. It's going to be a jobs bloodbath then, is it, Sasha?
Absolute bloodbath, Nick. So her very first budget that she announced, the national insurance increase, since then we've lost 120,000 jobs in hospitality. We're the third largest employer in the UK, the fifth largest sector. And she's not given us the recognition that we deserve. And when you dig down into the minutiae, Nick, the vast majority of those 120,000 and the vast majority of that 591 from Revolution Bars are young people. You know, they're getting jobs that support themselves through college or university or have a Saturday job in a pub to support them. Those jobs have gone. And, you know, it's the first step of the wrong to into society. You know, pubs are an important part of our DNA, and Labour seems to misunderstand the importance of them.
Lastly, why are they, Sasha, so tone-deaf on this, do you imagine? It's extraordinary. We'd have thought they would connect with their voter base here.
It is. Nick, I really don't like the word lies because I find it very, very strong. But the Chancellor stood at the dispatch box and during the budget announced this huge policy about business rates. And then when the storm happened and when they started getting banned from pubs that Andy started that you just spoke to previously, they did a huge U-turn and she said, well, actually, sorry, we weren't fully aware of all the stats and the figures. Well, I'm sorry, Nick, that's wrong. As the chair of the NTIA and UK Hospitality and BBPA and BII, all the trade bodies presented the exact facts. And we told her, if you do this, business rates on pubs alone will increase by 76%, by hotels 115%. And they went ahead with it, and you saw the reaction of the public. Well, it's not going to go away. This ban is going to continue and we're going to extend it for cafe bars, for restaurants, for hotels, and they will have to come back to the table.
Hang on, so Labour MPs are now going to be banned from coffee shops?
Absolutely.
Is that active now or that is about to begin, Sasha?
So I'm in a WhatsApp group that was that Andy leads, actually, and I went to bed at 10:30 last night, Nick, because I knew I had to be up early for your programme today.
Thank you.
But when I woke up, they were still talking at 3:00 this morning, and yes, it's going to be active. Okay. I'll leave it to Andy to announce.
Okay.
We're going to extend the ban.
All right. Sasha, thanks for your time. Get some more rest, or if you're into the day, get another coffee. Sasha Lord, entrepreneur and chairs the Nighttime Industries Association. Calls already coming in on that. Let's find it, see if we can find out the first coffee shop or restaurant that's going to shout, get out of my coffee shop or restaurant. In other news, the media stand accused of looking away as the slaughter continues in Iran. Well, I'll try and put it right, at least on this show.
We have looked at preliminary evidence that shows us that there are bodies in morgues that have medical equipment on them, and yet they have bullet holes in the middle of people's foreheads.
That's Skylar Thompson. She's with the US-based Human Rights Activists News Agency. What is the true death toll? The figures vary extraordinarily. And then back home,
we reveal the largest haul of stolen tools yet as the Met Police find £2 million worth of equipment in one house. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the exclusive.
Yes, our very own Bob the Builder, Henry Riley, with that report. The 7:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in Beijing on the first trip to China by a British Prime Minister since 2018. Hundreds of flood warnings are in place after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain across the UK, and business leaders are urging ministers to extend business rate support beyond pubs and small music venues. LBC weather, early fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain will continue for the north and east of Scotland, with hill snow in places, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 16 at the M40. It's because a lorry broke down earlier and traffic was being held. That traffic's now being released, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the M1 southbound to junction 12 at Flitwick because emergency repair works are taking place and two lanes are closed. The A13 was blocked briefly westbound just after the Five Bells interchange after an accident. It has reopened, but there are still restrictions, so there are queues from the Pitsea flyover. Very busy on the A22 northbound to the M25 junction after an accident. On the trains, Thames Link services aren't running between South Croydon and East Grinstead, and Southern services remain suspended between Horsham and Dorking.
LBC.
Dogs and cats. Sure, they need a lot, but they're worth every penny. Still, would be good if you could save a few pennies, right? Well, if you've got a Tesco Club Card, you'll get a Club Card discount on Tesco Pet Insurance. And all policies include Vetphone for peace of mind 24/7. Just search online for Tesco Pet Insurance. Pets age 8 weeks or over, Vetphone provided by Vets Direct Limited. Monetary limits, excesses and exclusions apply. Arranged by Pinnacle Insurance Limited.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7. I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy. How's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
7:21, coming to you, Martin's. Jamie, your views on what we've heard regarding pubs. It is the front page of a number of your newspapers. The Daily Mail, Reeves puts nail in coffin of the high street. The Daily Mirror, half measures. Even they, as a Labour-supporting paper, are not hugely impressed. The Eye, pubs U-turn to save Britain's locals from extinction, but no help for restaurants facing April tax hikes. Headlines are meant to be eight words, guys. Let's not forget the size of that one. And it is also, of course, on the front page of... Or it's mentioned on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Their lead story is Starmer led witch hunt against Iraq veterans. Let's take one other front page, not least because we produced it. It is the Daily Express, and it is the calls that you put into the Home Secretary yesterday and her admission that just 350 migrants arrived, only 281 leave. Quel total farce. What an absolute farce, is the front page of the Daily Express. The LBC website is looking at Storm Chandra, and indeed, as are we, my colleague LBC's man in the southwest, Andy Ballantyne, will report on that. There is, of course, now the big freeze, the fear of ice, and a full report on that, as I say, minutes away, 7:22. Martin's in Stafford. What do you think the Chancellor's done? How much help will that be, these new changes? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm the acting leader for Staffordshire County Council.
Oh, hello, Councillor. Also... Good to have you on, sir.
Thank you. I also owned the UK's longest running nightclub, just missed its 50th year of lockdown.
Oh.
So I've been involved in this for many decades. And I know Andy, I know Sasha Lord very well. I actually sat on with the NTIA as well.
Nighttime Industry Association. Yep, okay. So what's the name of your club? I'm just thinking loads of my listeners might have visited it.
It was Silk's Nightclub in Cannock in Staffordshire.
Okay, sir. Yep, okay.
So, yeah, just missed its 50th year.
Right.
Same owner, same business model. As I say, no one else can hold that record. But I can only echo all the words Andy Lennox and Sasha Lord had said, but I'd like to hit you from another point on this. The overnight accommodation rate, our hotels, and business tourism.
Yeah.
Now, we've already had an instruction from this government to add a levy, or all devolved powers to add an overnight levy per person, per night, at every hotel accommodation. They are being taxed to the hilt far higher than any of our counterparts around the world. You have to go to some obscure country to find it taxed any higher.
Right.
Our business tourism is worth billions because it brings in extra wealth as well to the business sector.
Right.
Our conference sector, where you work, where you play. The likes of in Staffordshire, we have some of the greatest events to come to. We
right.
have Drayton Manor, we have Alton Towers, we have a Trentham Estates.
Okay. Yep.
They all require hotels. They also all do business conferencing.
Can I ask you what you don't have to answer, but I could look it up. What political shade are you, Martin? What party?
I am Reform UK. We have a very large majority in Staffordshire.
Okay. Why do you think then, lastly, on a political, and you wear two hats here, both as a businessman in this industry, but also as a politician, indeed a leading politician, why, I'm going to put the same question to you, why are Labour so tone deaf over this, Martin?
I think they are just tone deaf. They have no look at it. I mean, the way I've looked at it, I've started a nighttime economy survey for Staffordshire to look at what will come. Our whole social economic structure is in change. It's evolutionary. It always does change. Our last one was the mid-80s. The special sang about it, Ghost Town. And then we had a new boom.
All right. Martin, good luck with both the jobs you're doing there and good luck with obviously stimulating more money coming into Staffordshire. I have to move on. Thank you. 7:25. Jamie's in Chelmsford. Your reaction to what you're hearing, Jamie? Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for taking the call. It's more, for me, it's more, we were talking about business rates cuts and so on, but we're still ignoring the facts about cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's more mortgages, rent, council tax, bills, food, everything is more expensive and therefore we have less money to spend in pubs and hotels and restaurants.
Yeah, although there was an increase in spending last Christmas on the previous Christmas. So
yeah,
if there's something special, so that's why I think pubs are in trouble, Jamie, because let's be honest, if you're having some mates around, or you may as well just go and buy the beer or the wine in a supermarket and sit in your front room. Do you know what
100%.
I mean? And if you want to have a meal, if you're taking your wife or your girlfriend or whatever or your mate out, then you probably want to go to a gastropub or a restaurant. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And then that is a, now you could probably do that previously if mortgage rates weren't through the roof a couple of times, two, three times a month, but that's now not the case. People can't even do it at all. It is a very rare occasion now.
I agree.
And there is less travelling to these places. And if you want to stimulate economy, you want to stimulate the growth, you've got to have people putting money into it and having the ability to put money into it.
Lastly, you mentioned the cost of living crisis quite rightly. Let's move away from pubs and restaurants and hotels. How in tune do you think the government, the Chancellor, is on the cost of living crisis more broadly, Jamie?
I don't think it's been spoken about enough. I think we're about to, there is a risk of a generation of young people who can't access housing, anything like that. And we're at risk of isolating them even more and creating a slightly wider gap in wealth and the ability to move forward in life.
You've made some really good points. Jamie, have a good one. Thank you for your input on that. 7:27. Let's move on. Storm Chandra has left Chandramonium behind it. Trapped motorists had to be recovered from danger to life flooding. A month's worth of rain fell in hours in some parts of the UK. Gales hit 80 miles an hour. There were more than 100 flood warnings and hundreds of schools and colleges were forced to close. Let's go to one of the epicentres that was struck. Andy Ballantyne, LBC South West correspondent, joins us from Exeter. Andy, what you got? Morning.
Good morning. Well, this time yesterday, I was stood in thigh-deep water. Today, it's only ankle-deep. Dozens rescued from their drowned-out cars or flooded homes. Residents in places across the East Devon tell me it's the worst flooding they've seen in some 40 or 50 years. Billy's family home flooded in Axminster.
It's up to my waist with water. All my furniture's down, all in my kitchen, can't get downstairs. So I had to climb out the window.
Roads turned into rivers, fields turned into lakes, sinkholes have shut railway lines, dual carriageways to single track roads, all closed, making journeys to school or work impossible for the vast majority. For 11-year-old Rex, 8-year-old Ruby and 13-year-old Solomon, Storm Chandra was pretty scary.
Lashing it down with just hard rain. It sounded like hail, but it was just hard rain. And then it just flooded the whole farm.
I mean, I was a bit scared, so I couldn't really get to sleep. But I did get to sleep eventually.
Our fencing's completely gone, most of it. It's filled up right into our yard.
With recent record-breaking river levels and rising, a major incident has been declared in Somerset with some 50 properties flooded. A month's rain in one night, 60 to 80 millimetres of heavy downpours with more forecasts. Businesses unsure whether to start the clean-up, but for Stephen, the owner of Tipton St John Garage, livelihoods are on the line.
It'll take the next 6 months of cleaning stuff to get us back to where we were, but to actually get the place operational, yeah, hopefully certainly by the end of the week, the boys will be working again and hopefully earning some money.
Another heavy band of rain is less than 24 hours away. Concern across the southwest as the ground is saturated and has no chance to recover. Nick, all piling on more misery for communities totally fed up of this storm season so far.
LBC's southwest correspondent Andy Ballantyne, the great Ballantyne, reporting from Exeter. Thank you for that. Just a couple of emails coming in. Well, a lot, but just a couple from the top. Guy in Lincolnshire, I'm bewildered. If the relief is not across hospitality, just pub, but not even pubs serving food, I cannot think of a pub near me that does not serve food, from privately owned to Wetherspoons. This is a knee-jerk, lack-of-thought correction of an unscoped policy. Vijay says, this is what happens when the Chancellor lacks the basic understanding of how growth is created. One of our senior colleagues joining us later in the hour, possibly to add more light to that. Meanwhile, in other news, an area where we desperately need to shed some light as the killings continue in Iran, where estimates now of the dead vary from 3 to 30,000. And talking of killings on a grand scale, Holocaust denial at... BBC, where, unlike other broadcasters, including Sky and Channel 4, they were unable to even mention Holocaust Memorial Day on their 6 o'clock bulletin yesterday. Millions of people killed, the anniversary, but not for the BBC. But why am I not surprised? 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer will arrive in China later to start the first visit to the country by a British Prime Minister since 2018. He stressed the importance of rebooting Britain's relationship with the country. Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts remain in place after heavy rain from Storm Chandra. A major incident's been declared in Somerset, where dozens of properties have been flooded. And business leaders are urging ministers to extend business rates support beyond pubs and small music venues. Yesterday, the Treasury confirmed that it was cutting rates by 15% from April after backlash over November's budget. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells, patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
We're asking if Trump has had a change of heart or perhaps just a change of mind about the ICE agents' tactics on the streets of Minneapolis. Is he losing this battle?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NS&I. Visit nsandi.com.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign.
to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico, or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives, or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 7:34. Back to the relief, for what it's worth, to the pubs in a moment. Let's talk about other money matters. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, joins me now. Why did TikTok stop the clock at the 11th hour? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, it's a big day in the US for the tech giants. We will talk about TikTok, but we're also talking about Meta, Snap, and YouTube. I think a lot of campaigners, maybe some investors, and certainly a lot of parents will be keeping a close eye on the opening of a fairly extraordinary series of court cases, which is getting underway in the US today after a huge group of parents and children and school districts have taken some of the world's most powerful companies to court, accusing these tech giants of intentionally designing their products to be addictive. The trials kick off in Los Angeles. There will be all sorts of evidence submitted by people talking about the relationship between these addictive social media algorithms and depression, eating disorders, their mental health, etc. There are about 1,500 plaintiffs, people who have come together in this combined legal effort. It's going to be interesting, not least because an awful lot of documents will be revealed in what's called the disclosure stage of the trial, some of which have already been made public, and you have internal conversations from senior engineers at these platforms seemingly acknowledging the addictive nature of what they're doing, comparing themselves to drug pushers. TikTok has actually settled with the claimants, so that they won't be going along with the proceedings. The terms of that settlement are not clear, but as one legal observer says, you only settle if you really, really don't want things coming out in open court. So an interesting series of trials perhaps to keep an eye on there.
Interesting also how AI is developing, and you feature a story on your front page today.
Yes, the co-founder of Anthropic, which is worth about £350 billion, and is the platform behind the very popular and successful Claude platform, very similar to ChatGPT, is a very thoughtful leader in this field, as many of them tend to be. And he has written a 20,000-word essay in which he warns that humanity is about to be handed almost unimaginable power as the technology advances to what he calls powerful AI. He defines powerful AI as a model that is smarter than a Nobel Prize winner across almost all relevant fields, able to perform multiple complex tasks with a skill exceeding that of the most capable humans in the world. He adds, it cannot possibly be more than a few years before AI is better than humans at essentially everything. And he says it's deeply unclear whether our social, political and technological systems possess the maturity to wield this power. It's a really extraordinary essay. I started to read it last night and I went all the way through it and thought, we've got to put this on the front page. It's a very interesting case. He is philosophical. He is optimistic that the work that they're doing could contain the risks, as he put it, but he does call for greater public debate, greater regulatory oversight, because he says that the prize is so powerful, economic growth and great scientific developments, that we're almost blind to the risks, which he describes as potentially existential to human civilization. So you can take the optimistic side on this. You could read his warnings over your morning coffee. But I think it's a very interesting intervention in the debate.
We're talking about the impact of the budget measures as regards the pub and hospitality sector, and we're looking sadly, as I think we discussed yesterday, nearly 600 jobs going with that Revolution bar chain. But there's more pressures as well in other job sectors, Christian.
Yes, there's huge disruption unfolding around the world. Some of it is AI related, some of it is not. But we saw news overnight that parcel delivery giant UPS says it will be cutting 30,000 jobs this year. Now, the main reason for that is that they are moving away from shipping Amazon deliveries, which they say are extraordinarily dilutive to its profit margins, i.e. there's nothing in it for them. Says these job cuts will be made through buyout offers to existing full-time drivers and by not replacing staff who leave voluntarily. Its earnings for the year are up to just under £20 billion, and they forecast revenue next year of just under £90 billion. It cut 48,000 jobs, by the way, last year, and these sound like huge numbers, and they are, but you have to consider they have about 500,000 employees working around the world. 80,000 of those are in management positions. So they will be making some changes. Amazon, by the way, for what it's worth, is pursuing its own round of tens of thousands of jobs cuts. So about 15,000 job cuts were announced last October. And these were confirmed accidentally overnight in an email that somebody senior at Amazon sent more widely than they ought to have done, referring to Project Dawn and confirming what had been suspected to be another round of layoffs, as they put it in the email, to strengthen the company.
Yeah, it's going to go on, I fear. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow. 7:39 is the time. Let's come away and go to more global matters and the media, or many parts of the media stand accused of ignoring events in Iran, with some notable exceptions. There was a very powerful piece on the Channel 4 news last night, and I won't say we have covered it every day because I have failed, but we try to cover it every day. Now, this has conflicting accounts come in for the number of people who've lost their lives in those uprisings. I mean, the numbers vary extraordinarily. Now, the Iranian government itself acknowledges a figure of north of 3,000. The US-based human rights activist news agency, or Hrana, now their figures have been pretty reliable during previous crackdowns, says it can verify more than 6,000 deaths and has more than 17,000 more recorded deaths under investigation. That would take us to roughly 23,000. Meanwhile, figures from doctors based outside Iran, speaking with colleagues, associates and others inside Iran, they're saying it's considerably above 30,000, 33,000. And there are reports, and I will modify my language, because it is breakfast and you could have children getting up or even in the car or whatever it might be, of the executions taking place in the most brutal of circumstances. I know there's no easy way for an execution to take place. I understand all of that. But these are particularly brutal in which they continue, as do the protests. So what happens next? Well, we have the opportunity to speak with Nicholas Hopton, who served as British ambassador to Iran as recently as 2018. He's also a distinguished fellow at RUSI and director general of the Middle East Association. This is a very grim first question to put to you, sir, but what do you imagine the death toll might be? Morning to you.
Good morning. I think what we know is that tens of thousands are likely to have been killed in these protests, many of them over the weekend of 8th, 9th January, immediately after an internet blackout was imposed by the regime. And before that, the protests had not been without casualties, but the numbers killed by the security forces were considerably lower. It seems that over that period, when the internet was down, the authorities, the Basij, the military thugs who act on behalf of the regime in particular, have been killing indiscriminately. And that went on for a considerable number of days because the internet was down until very recently. Messages have been filtering out over the last weekend, as you described just now, with varying reports. We don't know exactly how many have been killed. In a way, it's the actual number perhaps is less important than the fact that this is considerably the worst abuse of the Iranian people by their regime since the 1979 revolution. As I say, it seems likely tens of thousands have died. Many, many more are imprisoned for protesting, and others will be executed despite some in the regime claiming that no executions are taking place.
Mr. Hopton, what level of contact do you still maintain with some people in Iran? What are they telling you about the situation and whether protests are continuing?
I do have messages coming to me quite frequently from within Iran, as well as from many in the diaspora outside of Iran. And since the some level of internet coverage was restored, or people got their VPN coverage back and were able to get messages out, over the weekend in particular, I was reached by quite a large number of contacts and friends inside Iran. Obviously, they won't want to talk about the detail in social media messages in particular, given the nature of the regime and how it deals with people who speak out. But the clear message coming from all of them, whether they were in Yazd or in Isfahan or in Tehran or Tabriz, all over the country, and this is a very big country, of course, the clear message was that it's been awful and that people are now holding their breath, waiting to see what happens next and how the international community, particularly the United States, react in the coming days.
Lastly, that was the point I was going to make, Mr. Ogden. As with so many things globally, it all seems to revolve around the US of A, doesn't it?
Well, the US still remains the only real military superpower, although clearly the Chinese are very strong and getting stronger all the time. And Donald Trump has made it his task to, as he would say, bring peace to the Middle East. Now, one could debate that at length, how he's going about it. But he is focused on the situation in Iran. He has been since he first became president, through his policies basically withdrew the U.S. from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, which was a nuclear deal for lifting sanctions back in 2015. Now, Donald Trump has amassed a military force on the close to Iran. He talks about an armada. The USS Abraham Lincoln carrier group is there. And the question now is, how will he use it? Will he try for some sort of Venezuela-type model with minimum use of military force in order to make the regime more compliant through negotiations? Or will he use a limited military intervention, as he did in June, to end the 12-day war with Israel and Iran? Or will it be a much more significant military intervention? And bear in mind, Iran is not totally isolated and alone. Others do not want to see US, as they would see US-Israeli domination of the Middle East. And the Chinese, apparently, the reports have been reinforcing the Iranian regime with air defense missiles in the last few days.
Enjoyed our conversation, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons. Nicholas Hopton, thanks for giving us all the background to those horrific scenes in Iran. Mr. Hopton served as British ambassador as recently as 2018 as a distinguished fellow at RUSI, Director General of the Middle East Association. I'm just going to read this. What is it? It's a text from Mohammed in Twickenham. He says he's got a figure of 36,000 Iranian people killed. Not newsworthy. One person dies in America is every front page of every mainstream media. Mohammed goes on, why? Family of detained girls are asking for morning after pills as they're brutally gang-raped by the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard terrorists, and its jihadist mercenaries. Mohammed, I thought I understood the news business, but it does seem quite incredible, notwithstanding the horror of what took place in Minneapolis, that so little media attention seems to be focused on Iran. I'm afraid it does seem to be wrong on all counts, doesn't it? Coming up directly after the news, the rollout of AI. You'll hear from...
We want to make sure people have got the skills they need to get the opportunities of the future. And we're working really closely with companies, with the NHS, local government.
That's Technology Secretary Liz Kendall. Plus, Holocaust denial at the BBC yesterday.
27th of January, Holocaust Memorial Day, a day for remembering the 6 million people who were murdered by the Nazi regime over 80 years ago.
Why can't you bring yourself to say the word Jews or Jewish people? And that is factually incorrect, because if you actually tally up the number of people, it is north of 8 million. And this year of all years, if I was the head of news at the BBC, and don't worry, that was never going to happen, ever, ever, I would have said, you know what, we've had a pretty bad year looking after our Jewish viewers, listeners, readers, whatever it is on the website. In fact, we've had a shocking year. We are going to go big on Holocaust Memorial. That's what we're going to do this year. Let's put it right for Bob Villain. Let's put it right for that shocking documentaries. How on earth did they not even cover it on the 6 o'clock news? Can I tell you something? I think they only put it on the 10 o'clock news for 30 seconds after we phoned up and said, hello, it's on Sky, it's on 4, it's on everywhere. Why are you not doing Holocaust? share more of that with you later. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China to start the first visit to the country by a British Prime Minister since 2018. Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts remain in place after heavy rain from Storm Chandra. And business leaders are urging ministers to extend business rate support beyond pubs and small music venues. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. A high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the Surrey stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise just after Junction 11 at Chertsey, and there are now delays back to Junction 13 at Staines. Clockwise is open but slow from Junction 9 at Leatherhead because of onlookers. The A13's been closed again westbound at the Pitsea flyover, and that's following an accident, so that's causing queues. It's closed all the way up to the Five Bells interchange. Also, delays continuing Greenwich. Blackhall Lane is closed northbound because of a fuel spillage. Severe delays on the A2 westbound from Dartford Heath to the Eltham Tunnel. It was after an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are open, but there are still delays of about 40 minutes on the approach.
This is LBC.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at your local mini retailer. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Get up to £300 off city breaks and up to 25% off flights. That's something special to book forward to. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8 minutes before eight. Calling every adult in the UK. Are you aware you're eligible for free, newly benchmarked courses to gain practical AI skills to help you in your work? No, me neither. Lord only knows how it could help a radio presenter, but that's probably a question too far. But let's turn to Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology, and of course Labour MP Liz Kendall. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. It is you and your colleagues, obviously, that are championing this, spearheading this. So what exactly lies behind this announcement, and how can people avail themselves of these services? Morning to you.
Morning. Well, we want AI to work for Britain, and that means we need Britons who can work with AI. Look, this technology, I think, is going to change all of our lives. But this Labour government is not just a bystander in it. We want to help people through the changes that AI will bring. And that starts by this huge offer, free online AI courses for all. I've actually done one of the courses myself this weekend, Nick, a 20-minute course on how you actually ask AI questions, prompt it, how you can use that, turn it into documents, how you can check whether the answers are correct or not. But there's a whole range of courses free online, you know, including day-long courses and courses specifically for small businesses, looking at how they can integrate AI into what they do, you know, on issues like HR or accountancy, the books, so they can free up their time from the admin and spend more time selling their business. We have got to upskill this country so we can grab the opportunities of the future. It's a really important message out there, and I would urge everybody, go on to the AI Skills Hub, put it into search, it will come up, and there'll be lots of different accredited courses there for you.
Who's providing the educational matter in the AI Skills Hub? Where have we got that from?
So we've got it from a range of technology companies, some like Google and Microsoft, others like Sage, which is a brilliant UK company based in Newcastle that does a lot of work with small businesses. Our goal is to upskill 10 million people by 2030, including 2 million people who work in small businesses. But today we're also announcing that we are got new partners to do this, from the Federation of Small Businesses and the CBI through to the NHS, a Department for Work and Pensions, and local government. This technology will change how we learn, how we earn, and we want to prepare the country for the future. We will not leave people behind. And I think that's a really, you know, this is going to be, I think, the biggest single offer of upskilling since Harold Wilson's Open University, because we want to get those opportunities in future. I mean, we will remember Harold Wilson's Open
you're
University.
You're too young. I remember. You're too young, Liz Kendall. I will not. Well, let's put it to the point. Lastly on this, my late father was a journalist, so I can certainly see how he could have benefited from AI, particularly in the work he did in assessing stories, assessing journalism. Mm-hmm. Might I ask what your dad does or did and how it would have helped him?
Well, my dad, for many years, he left school at 16 and went to work for the Bank of England. He did all his accountancy jobs, training there.
Okay.
And then, of course, he didn't have a formal accountancy qualification. So when he left that job, he found it really, really hard to get work. And what AI does, one of the specific offers on this course, is do your CV. I mean, when my dad, after all those years at the bank, had to do his CV, he was starting from scratch. He didn't know how to do that. So there are CV courses on there, and I think that would have really helped.
All right. That's very helpful on that matter. Can I turn to you for some input as regards the measures for pubs that were announced yesterday? For many people, it's too little too late. It's a 15% discount on rates this year. That's an average pub around £31 a week, followed by a two-year freeze, and nothing to protect pubs from the crippling increases in NI. Are you sure that's enough? This is half measures, isn't it? Or small beer?
I think it's a really important step forward we've made. It comes on top of the £4.3 billion worth of support we put in at the budget. I think our figures suggest it's over £1,600 a year off the bills for pubs. There's more that we want to do. We're looking at how we calculate business rates for pubs. You'll know, Nick, that there's a different methodology for pubs where their takings are taken into account, not just the size of their property. And we've got a really important big high street strategy coming up later this year. We're working closely with those pubs. Some organisations, you know, have welcomed it. I think that's important. Is there more to do? Yes, because we think our pubs are so important for their communities as well as for our economy.
So will a gastropub qualify?
Well, this is for all of those pubs that we're doing this. The cap that we've put in place of a maximum 15% increase applies to all of the small businesses whose valuations are under £100,000. But as I say, we're looking again at this methodology that is used to calculate business rates. It's more based currently on the size of those pubs and the takings, but we really do want to get this right and work with those businesses.
So a gastropub will qualify?
Yes, it's about the size of those pubs.
And so when one newspaper says it only applies to pubs where customers can buy drinks without eating, that's not quite right. It's down to the size and the take.
That's not my understanding of it. But what I would just say here is, I think...
Well, if you don't understand it respectfully, how on earth is a publican meant to understand it?
Well, I think all of that information will be available to people. We've been pretty clear. It's across the board. I think it is very important. The big question here...
It's not a Scotch egg moment here, is it, Liz?
No.
I'm afraid I was the architect of Scotch eggs with Michael
Gove.
Yeah, it was me. Yeah, I don't want to do that with you.
Or the pasty tax.
No, that wasn't me. That was George Osborne. I wasn't behind the pasty tax. But I am the creator of the Scotch egg conundrum.
Yeah, I understand. Actually, quite.
So if I've got a pub that serves a Scotch egg, do I qualify, Liz Kendall?
They are hugely complicated. I mean, most pubs are selling crisps and things like that too. So my understanding is that it covers all. I think that there's more to do here. That's why we are looking at the methodology of how it's calculated, and we want a good a high street strategy, because we want to support those pubs, we want to support those small businesses. And what we've can I just say to just one
Please.
Thing here,
yeah,
Nick,
go ahead, yeah.
That what we have tried to do here, the big thing in the budget was to say this: look, some of these big online companies were being charged with out of town facilities were charged the same rate as our amazing independent pubs and shops and cafes on the high street. We said that was wrong. We increased the so-called multiplier for those online facilities by over a third, because we wanted to see a rebalancing. Is there more we can do? Yes. And I'm sure you and pubs across the country will continue to make their voices heard.
Last question. Thank you for that. Last question. Yesterday, according to the Daily Telegraph, we learnt that China had snooped on the phones of staff working to three former prime ministers, not Sir Keir Starmer, four former prime ministers, all of them conservatives. And today, Sir Keir will land in China, talk about a golden age to an ice age. He wants a golden age and away from the ice age. What should our relationship be with China? Are they friend or foe if they're spying on previous PMs?
I think we should be clear-eyed and realistic about this. Our national security will always come first, and I am absolutely sure too that the Prime Minister will raise all sorts of issues around the human rights abuses we've seen. But we also know that China is the second largest economy in the world, and that if we can have a trading relationship that is safe, that meets our requirements on national security, when the French have been, I think it's something like four times since we last went, that, Khan has been, Trump is going. If we can have that good trading relationship in a safe and secure way, I think that is in the national interest for our economy.
They were listening to Liz Truss and Boris Johnson on their mobile phones. God knows what they learnt from them. They were listening to their staff on their mobile phones. That can't be right.
Well, look, I can't comment on those national security issues. We are absolutely confident that all of that is safe, including for the Prime Minister. But we have to be clear-eyed and realistic. We need to be absolutely firm on national security and human rights. But if there are good business deals to be done in a safe way, I think that is important that we work to secure those economic partnerships in Britain's interest.
Roll up for the AI skills hub. It can help every trade, profession and job in the land, as outlined by Liz Kendall, Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology. Liz Kendall, thank you for your time. You've taken us to 1 minute after. Let's get some LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China to start the first visit to the country by a British Prime Minister since 2018. He stressed the importance of rebooting Britain's relationship with Beijing. The government's been criticised for approving a new Chinese embassy in London despite security concerns. Speaking to LBC, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says the visit will help businesses and jobs in the UK.
I was in China last January and managed to do deals worth hundreds of millions of pounds to support
support British businesses doing business and exporting to China. And I'm confident that the Prime Minister will come back with a package of measures that helps businesses in Britain, that helps jobs in Britain, because we make and produce some brilliant stuff in the UK, and I want to sell it around the world.
Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts remain in place after heavy rain from Storm Chandra. A major incident's been declared in Somerset, where dozens of properties have been flooded. The government's under pressure to extend business rate supports beyond pubs and small music venues. Last night it was confirmed that rates would be cut by 15% from April after backlash over November's budget. But there is criticism the likes of cafes, hotels and hairdressers are being left out. The Cabinet Minister Liz Kendall has just told Nick the announcement was an important forward step, but not the final one.
We're working closely with those pubs. Some organisations, you know, have welcomed it. I think that's important. Is there more to do? Yes, because we think our pubs are so important for their communities as well as for our economy.
So vets will have to publish price lists for common treatments and disclose if they're independent or part of a chain. The government's proposals are aimed at helping pet owners understand what they're paying for and to avoid unexpected costs. Free artificial intelligence training will be offered to every adult in the UK. It's part of ministers' plans to upskill 10 million workers with key AI skills by 2030. And history will be made later when the first woman to lead the Church of England takes up her post. Dame Sarah Mullally is set to be confirmed as the 106th Archbishop of Canterbury in a service at St Paul's Cathedral. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,207. It closed up 58 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells and patchy rain and hill snow continuing for the north and east of Scotland. Showers for the west of the UK. A high of 10 degrees from Global's newsroom for LBC. I'm Dominic Ellis.
Because you bought your robot vacuum on your Barclay card, you got 0% interest for up to 24 months, which makes watching it, hypnotically sweeping up your crumbs, even more satisfying. Oh, missed a bit. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Barclay card. Make money work for you. Subject to financial status, new customers only. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable, 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on £1,200 credit limit. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after eight, Wednesday, January the 28th. Coming up in this hour, the BBC apologises after its Holocaust denial, where they called the millions of Jewish people who lost their lives simply people and forgot and omitted the fact that they were effectively executed or exterminated because of their religion. Yes, they've managed to get it wrong yet again and not even feature it on the so-called landmark 6 o'clock bulletin. We'll have more on that. In other news, in a rare intervention yesterday, US First Lady Melania Trump called for unity after events in Minnesota. She told Fox News,
"We need to unify. I'm calling for unity. I know my husband, the president, had a great call yesterday with the governor and the mayor, and they're working together."
Back home,
we reveal the largest haul of stolen tools yet as the Met Police find £2 million worth of equipment in one house. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the exclusive.
At home and away. Dreams of China in your hand, dreams of a trade deal with China, but this comes the day after it was discovered they, the Chinese, have been spying on previous prime ministers. What should our relationship with China be?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Here is the news. The BBC have done it again and have managed to offend their Jewish viewers, listeners and readers by omitting the word Jew or Jewish from coverage of Holocaust Memorial Day. Now, I have to tell you, I was sitting watching the news last night, and it occurred to me that that was a strange BBC 6 o'clock news. I said to my wife, "That's a strange one. Let's quickly watch Channel 4. And Channel 4, yep, there was a piece. I think it was the last piece of the last part of the bulletin was coverage there. Quick check to Sky News. I knew the coverage that we'd offered here on LBC, all doing it. So we put in a phone call on. My colleague put in a phone call. asking why there was no coverage, for which we were told background that running orders constantly shift. Thanks for that. We'd never have known that in the news business unless you told us. And then, I don't know if you, but I didn't, but a colleague watched it for me, the 10 o'clock news, somehow it did get on. 30, 40 seconds? Hold on a second. This is Holocaust Memorial Day, where the King and Queen have hosted a reception for Holocaust survivors, and a Holocaust survivor went to cabinet meeting, and everybody quite rightly stood up and applauded her. And the 6 o'clock news, not a word. Here's what they did cover. Storm Chandra, the pubs, rent increases for leaseholders, events in Iran, killings in Minneapolis, the BAFTAs, menopause, fewer people drinking, social media trial, coastal erosion in Suffolk. Well, that's bigger than 6 million Jews being exterminated, isn't it? Come on, let's get your news values right. The tennis, Carol Kirkwood leaving. Well, that's got to be bigger than 6 million Jews being killed in the Holocaust, hasn't it? Because she's only been telling us that since about 8 o'clock in the morning. So that story has been around for 10 hours. And you're going to run with that as opposed to 6 million people. By the way, they said 6 million people were killed. No, no, no. 6 million Jews. If you actually do what's called journalism, and I am available for lectures at the BBC if you can afford my rate, 6 million Jewish people, 1.8 million Poles, 250,000 Roma, 200,000 people with disabilities, 15,000, possibly slightly more, homosexuals. So it's not hard, actually, to get north of 8 million people. But not the way the BBC have it.
27th of January, Holocaust Memorial Day, a day for remembering the 6 million people who were murdered by the Nazi regime over 80 years ago.
Wrong, wrong, wrong! The 6 million were the Jewish people. It is more than 8 million. How can you be so factually incorrect? Having totally omitted at News at 6, because coastal erosion in Suffolk and Carol Kirkwood's departure far more important than more than 8 million people dying in the Holocaust, 6 million of whom were Jewish people, it did just about stagger onto News at 10.
Events have been taking place to mark Holocaust Memorial Day to remember the 6 million Jewish people murdered during World War II. The Houses of Parliament, Cardiff Castle and Edinburgh Castle have all been lit up this evening to mark 81 years since the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration and death camp. It also commemorates the millions of people outside the Jewish faith who were murdered through Nazi persecution and those targeted in more recent genocides.
That's Rita Chakrabarty. It's not her. For, of course, the scripts are handed to her. And not even a mention of the cabinet meeting, which features in all your newspapers today, where a Holocaust survivor was invited, and quite right, she got a standing ovation from all cabinet ministers. As I said before, in the unlikely event that I'd ever had a senior position at the BBC, and it never will happen, we have had a shocking, shocking 12 months looking after our Jewish listeners and viewers and everything else. We are going to do this right. We're going to have absolute coverage of Holocaust. But even then, they're in Holocaust denial. Adam Sherwin is arts and media correspondent for The Eye, regularly helps us with matters within the media. So an apology has now been forthcoming from the BBC that they managed to omit it. Why do they continually get this wrong, do you imagine? Good morning.
Morning. Well, you think if heads hadn't already rolled at the top of BBC News last year, then they might be rolling again today. And perhaps that's part of the problem here, that they don't have a head of news at the moment. They clearly had a script for Holocaust Memorial Day, which used people instead of Jews, because that was repeated on BBC Breakfast and the Today programme. So someone somewhere had taken an editorial decision to erase the word Jewish from their news reports. And then it went through the day, as you said, without a single mention on the 6 o'clock news. So this is a serious editorial failure, and somebody there has to say what happened here and what happened to the anti-Semitism training that every BBC journalist was supposed to have gone through following the failures last year over Gaza and the Glastonbury affair and all these kind of issues. So what's going on?
You and I are both looking in from without, as it were. Is there a sense of groupthink going on here?
There's probably an element of that they're desperate not to offend one group of people. If they were used Jewish, are they going to offend other people who say, what about all the other people that killed in the war and all that sort of thing? The Nazis committed genocide, yes, against these other groups, as you'd mentioned. But there is something specific about the 6 million Jews that died in the Holocaust. And you can't just make your journalism cringe to avoid offending and telling people what is impartiality, of course, at the core of the BBC, factually correct news and reporting.
Adam Sherwin, arts and media correspondent for The Eye. Good hearing from you, Adam. Be well. The BBC apology, quotes, in the news bulletins on Today and in the introduction to the story on BBC Breakfast, there were references to Holocaust Memorial Day, which were incorrectly worded, and for which we apologise. Both should have referred to 6 million Jewish people, and we will be issuing a correction. If you were listening yesterday, you'll know that I probably did more coverage of Holocaust Memorial Day than I have since 11 years ago, when I had the privilege of going around Auschwitz with a survivor and his granddaughter. Why? As I explained yesterday, because sadly the rise of anti-Semitism, not just here, witness events in Australia, has to both be mentioned and checked. And you don't do that by ignoring a story of such significance. Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement, a campaign against anti-Semitism, joins me now. Mr. Silverman, another apology from the BBC about another perceived snub towards Jewish people or Jewish causes. How do you respond? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The apology is worthless, I'm afraid. It's impossible to deny that there is an institutional problem with regard to Jewish matters at the BBC. We've seen it amplified over the last 2 years, but it goes way back beyond that. You've only got to look at their documentary, One Day in Gaza, from 2019, in which they repeatedly removed the word Jew and replaced it with Israeli in the subtitles every time somebody said they wanted to do something horrendous to a Jew. Now, this tells us some really worrying things, not just about what's happening on national broadcaster, but also what's happening in society. There is this attempt that has been going on for a very long time to universalize the Holocaust, to remove its Jewish specificity, and to make it a progressive cause that quite rightly acknowledges other genocides and atrocities, but completely diminishes, and as we've seen here, eradicates the Jewish nature of it. The Holocaust is the campaign by Nazi Germany to use industrial means to wipe out the entire Jewish race because they believe them to be both subhuman and a threat to civilization. It remains the most uniquely horrendous atrocity wrought on the world by humanity, and it is important that we remember exactly what it is in order to prevent it happening again. There is an aphorism that we see regularly on social media, to the effect that the world has never forgiven the Jews for the Holocaust. In other words, the Jews remain as a reminder to humanity of its capability for evil. And this is just an attempt to wipe that away. It's abhorrent.
It is indeed abhorrent. Lastly, Mr. Silverman, the outgoing Director General Tim Davey has spoken of the anti-Semitism training that's taken place at the BBC. What level of engagement have you had with that?
None.
You are a Director of Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. The BBC decides to put together anti-Semitism training, and they decline to get involved with you or your colleagues.
They spoke to us quite some time ago, and when it became apparent how superficial what they were asking for was, something like a 10 to 15 minute online primer, we thought it probably wouldn't be the most productive way of dealing with the matter.
Yeah, I think I'd probably second that. Stephen Silverman, your Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Right, let's do it differently. Only call me if you're surprised, which is the total opposite of what you should do in this industry. You try and say, call me if this affects me, call this worries you, call me if you're concerned about your children, call me if your pub's going to close, call me if whatever. Only call me if you're surprised. No, I don't think I'll get calls either. So fortunately, we're also going to...
We reveal the largest haul of stolen tools yet as the Met Police find £2 million worth of equipment in one house. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the exclusive.
So I think it's highly likely we'll be talking more about stolen tools on an industrial scale than yet another BBC apology. Don't you? 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China to start the first visit to the country by a British Prime Minister since 2018.
Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts remain in place after heavy rain from Storm Chandra. And a cabinet minister has admitted to Nick there's more work to do after business rates were cut for pubs and small music venues. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells, patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 in two places. Firstly, anti-clockwise to Junction 11 at Chertsey. It was after an accident and traffic was being held. Well, that traffic's now been released, but it's still very slow from Junction 14 at Heathrow. And then also anti-clockwise, it's slow from Junction 19 at Watford to 16 at the M40. It was after that lorry broke down earlier. On the M40, there are southbound queues to Junction 4 at High Wycombe, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. Still very slow on the M1 southbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. Those emergency repair works are taking place, and there are now queues of about 5 miles on the M2 eastbound to Junction 6 at Faversham, and that's also after an accident. And the A13's been closed again westbound at the Pitsey flyover.
LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf, this green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name, it's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 8. Paul's surprised. I'll come to you in just a moment. Not in the least bit surprised by the BBC's action yesterday. And some emails coming in on that. Let me just do a couple from Liz Kendall. The conversation we had about how we can all upskill AI. Lynn in Devon says, oh no, and this woman is in charge of skills, science and technology. What is going on? Unfortunately, Ant seems of a similar view. I've just had a look at these courses. They're a load of rubbish. They forget AI is moving so fast they're out of date. 2 days after publishing. As usual, poorly thought out by this government. It said they should have followed Rushmore Borough Council and Solent Business Skills and run live webinars from real humans on AI training. And on the subject of the BBC, I do like this one. Paul in Coventry. Nick, as a grizzled old left-wing shop steward, I'm opposed to your views on most things. On your criticism of the BBC on its so-called coverage of yesterday's Holocaust Memorial Day, I'm with you 100%. Paul, good to have you on. Thank you. And if you own Coventry and you support the local team, what a season you are enjoying. Now, Paul is in Oswald Twistle, and you, it says here you're surprised. Why?
I am, yeah. I would like to see 2 minutes silence on Holocaust Memorial Day to, give everyone the chance to remember.
So you're surprised that... Okay, so you're not surprised by the BBC's utter ineptitude?
Well, I am
here.
Surprised by the BBC, yeah. They are a national broadcaster, and they should have, featured a long article about the Holocaust.
Of course they should.
It's something we should never forget.
Yes, but of course, I have to say, I don't think it fits with their journalistic narrative in that 6 million Jewish people were made 6 million people, and 2.5 million people who were also killed in the Holocaust were totally ignored. That is a journalistic fail on just about every single level, and the person who wrote it should be fired. Just gone. Go and destroy someone else's business. You've destroyed enough of ours. Get out the door.
I totally agree with you.
Fantastic. If only I could take over the BBC, but they just can't afford me. Paul, look after yourself. I didn't think there'd be many calls on this, on that, but I think there will on this, because we have an extraordinary story of millions of pounds worth of stolen tools being uncovered. Millions in one site. Now, you'd think there would obviously, and I'm not belittling it if this is your trade for one moment, but you think if you're a tree surgeon, you might lose a chainsaw or two, or if you're a worker, you might lose a couple of drills or whatever, or a saw. And there are 46 reported cases of tool theft each year. Hang on, that's going on for 10,000 a week, isn't it? Yeah, something like that. Now, LBC's Henry Riley can reveal the details of the biggest discovery of stolen equipment ever in the United Kingdom. And it tracks to what's called an HMO, House of Multiple Occupancy. Here, with all the details, LBC's Henry Riley with the exclusive report. Henry, morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, on average, a tool is stolen every 12 minutes in the UK.
What, and morning, night?
It's incredible, yeah. And it happens all the time from sort of hotel car parks, from all sorts of places. And most frequently, as you mentioned, pinched from the vans of tradespeople. Now, police have been saying for years that they will crack down on this criminal practice. And today we revealed that the Met uncovered £2 million pounds worth of stolen tools and equipment from, as you say, just one site, one HMO, House of Multiple Occupancy, in Ilford. That is the largest stash of stolen tools ever discovered in the UK. Credit to the Metropolitan Police. Inspector Mark Connolly tells me what they found.
That ranges from, you know, high-value pieces of equipment, which are owned by big companies, all the way down to the smaller trades, where they've had their vans broken into, tools stolen from site. And, you know, we're able to identify those pieces of equipment, and we're able to clearly see that they've had, you know, serial numbers scratched out.
Now, it's the equivalent of 10 lorry loads of nicked tools if you were to fill up lorries to the brim. Shweb Awan, who's a...
10 lorry loads?
10 lorry loads filled completely to the brim.
Sainsbury's and Marks and Spencer's, those...
Yes, the
food ones.
Big ones, basically. Yeah, the Arctic type things. Yeah, yeah, massive ones.
Arctic,
did I say? What did I say? Arctic, sorry.
Arctic.
It's lorries.
They've got spirit levelers.
They probably have got spirit levelers, actually. I spoke with Shweb Awan, who's a gas engineer from Romford. He's been campaigning about this continuously for the last few years, and he also went along with the Met Police, saying it's been full of tools. He said there were 6 or 7 rooms filled to the brim with stolen kit, and said that some of the tools go back even before the pandemic.
These tools dated from 2018-19 when they were reported stolen. So this operation obviously has been going for quite a long time. And it's so brazen as well, to be honest with you, because they're selling stuff with the markings on them. They don't care.
Now, two suspects were arrested at the scene. A third individual was identified and arrested at a different address, which we found out had more stolen tools at that particular address. No idea of the scale as of yet. What's more, Nick, some of the items were taken from a site in Tilbury in Essex from contractors actually working on the HS2 railway project. Now, Inspector Connolly said the construction company involved in sort of building parts for High Speed 2, HS2, the railway line, reported that some of their high-value equipment had been taken, with trackers on some of the stolen goods, which then led officers to find this HMO in Ilford.
And that piece, those pieces of equipment were bespoke pieces of equipment which were stolen. That would have caused a delay to the project, which could have gone up to 2 months. They were paying £2,000 a day, you know, just to secure that site. So the impact would have been, you know, 2 months' worth of delays to the infrastructure, to the HS2 project.
And that's Inspector Connolly from the Met Police again. Nick, the suspects are thought to be part of organised criminal groups who resell these stolen items across the UK, across Europe. Officers now have all of those tools, and they're trying to reunite them with their rightful owners.
Now, I tease you a little bit in the newsroom, call you Bob the Builder, because you've done a number of stories on these, and I think you did one certainly last year. Typically, these go onto these boot sales, don't they, on a Sunday?
Yes, that is one of the main places where they are sold. It's also online marketplaces, which is a real problem, because if you are selling, I mean, there's not many checks if you want to sell something online, but you're right, it really is. I mean, there's been examples of Robert Jenrick, for example, the now Reform MP, going to one in Romford. There are others in Tottenham, for example, mostly in London, where you have these tools. And you know, Nick, because they're being sold at a fraction of what they're worth, and no tradesperson who knows what these expensive bits of kit are worth would sell it at that price. So it's car boot sales, a huge issue.
And the Met have a special unit, or they're trying to get deeper into this now, and they're working with Essex, is that right?
They are. So this one was a joint operation with Essex, who initially found the, because it was in Tilbury and Essex, that sort of initial complaint.
Do we know what it is?
It's unclear at the moment. It's an expensive bit of kit, basically.
Right. Does it dig a hole?
It probably is involved with digging a hole, yes. So that led officers to basically find this...
Specifically made for HS2.
To find this kit. Yes, it was involved with the HS2 project, directly working on it, which is why... I mean, the last thing we need is a further delay to HS2. I think the government's got enough to deal with.
I'm afraid we are slightly delayed with HS2 because the keeping of quit is in a house in Ilford. But we need to get it back to the site.
Recovered now, and the main thing is marking, Nick. That is the message to all tradespeople, that you can mark, it's no sort of good writing your name on it. You can get these forensically marked, you can get them in some cases tracked, and when you see some of the eye-watering sums that people have lost, it certainly seems worth it.
All right, thanks for that, Henry Riley, with that exclusive report, 828, if you have been a victim of that. It is worth going, but I know we hear them, but we do need to hear these stories about how you did lose a chainsaw, you lost an electric drill, you lost whatever other bit of kit you might need, and one of those power saws or something. And guess what? It turned up at the local boot sale, or it turned up on, is it Gumtree, have I got that right, or one of those online sites. Do let us know about that. Let's come back to the BBC's lack of coverage. This comes in from Martin in Wolverhampton. Why are you the only one bothered about how the BBC reported it? I haven't heard any other media outlets complaining about it. Okay, if you want to go and spend £3.20 on The Guardian, you'll read about it there. £3.20 on The Times, you'll read about it there. £2, The Daily Mirror, you'll read about it there. If you've got an extra couple of quid, £1.10, The iPaper, it's in The Daily Mail. Martin, why don't you check the media before you give me lectures about the media? And then next time I might read what you say. Richard's in Manchester on this story. What do you want to say, Richard? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. I always learnt, you know, throughout my life as a kid at school, that if I did something wrong, I was told off by the teacher and I was to learn from that mistake.
Yes,
and
me too.
Throughout my working life, if I did something wrong, that my line manager would say to me, look, you know, you've got that wrong and you really need to do it this way. And I was not expected to repeat the errors and the mistakes. So I give that analogy in respect of the BBC, where the BBC, I generally am surprised that they did not learn. There was so much that has happened in terms of education, recognition of their shortcomings and their inadequacies. And it leads me to conclude that there must be, if they deliberately avoiding the lessons that they're learning, then there is obviously, strategy is perhaps too strong a word, determination may be more accurate, to perpetuate what I can only see to be an agenda which has been characterised, rightly so, as anti-Semitic. And
do you know what? I think the way you've characterised your surprise is so accurate, and that's possibly the word I was reaching for in my conversation with Adam Sherwin from the iNewspaper, some kind of agenda, which is pretty chilling. Richard, always enjoy hearing from you. I've got to go because I'm already late to the news. We might continue with that. Certainly a lot of people calling in with tool thefts, and even if it is, and I appreciate it if it's your business, you've still got to renew it. Even if it is just one power tool, let's get an idea of the scale of that after Henry Riley's exclusive report. £2 million worth of kit in one house in Ilford. Then we go to global events. President Trump told Fox News last night...
Bottom line, everybody in this room, we view that as a very unfortunate incident, okay?
Right.
Everyone,
right.
Unless you're a stupid person, very, very unfortunate incident.
And as we approach the 10th anniversary of the Brexit vote, you'll hear from this man.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so, so sorry. There's no easy way to say I'm sorry.
Well, for many, he needn't apologise about his stance over Brexit. He fought to remain, obviously, as we all know, he lost. Sir Nick Clegg is joining us later in the hour. It's 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. He's pushing for deeper trade ties and says, like it or not, China matters for the UK. Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place across the country after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. The southwest has been worst affected and major incidents been declared in Somerset. And a cabinet minister has rejected claims a support package for England's pubs and small music venues is wholly inadequate. Speaking to Nick, Liz Kendall admitted there's more to do, but the cut to business rates is an important step forward. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells and patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC.
At Signature, our award-winning care homes are where luxury, comfort and peace of mind come together. With locations across London and the Home Counties, we offer exceptional residential, nursing and dementia care within five-star surroundings that feature a wealth of amenities, including our new wellness studios. To find out how you can receive an exclusive £1,000 discount with our new inclusive pricing, book a visit now at signaturecarehomes.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggies, Duck Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on that conversation. Henry Riley's exclusive report. £2 million worth of kit, including something specifically designed for HS2, sitting in one house in Ilford. Steve's in Southampton. Now, you won't have lost £2 million worth of kit, I imagine, but what have you lost, Steve? What's your trade? Good morning. I don't know that that's going to work, Steve. I think I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because I want to speak to one of my colleagues on another story. We might have actually lost your signal altogether. If you can still hear me, talk to me. We need to move you to a better place. I don't mean move you out of Southampton. There's nothing wrong with Southampton, but we need to move you to a better area so that I can actually hear what you're saying. And while we do that, let's go to events away from this country. We go to a very troubled part of the United States, to Minnesota. Speaking last night, President Trump said he sought to de-escalate the situation.
Bottom line, everybody in this room, we view that as a very unfortunate incident, okay?
That's right.
Everyone,
that's
unless
right.
you're a stupid person, very, very unfortunate incident.
And in a rare intervention yesterday, of course, I think just days before, a day before the movie opens concerning it, Melania Trump appeared on Fox News.
We need to unify. I'm calling for unity. I know my husband, the president, had a great call yesterday with the governor and the mayor, and they're working together.
Well, let's turn to Matt Fry, who, of course, is an LBC colleague, Saturday mornings from 10, but well-known, of course, a Channel 4 news presenter, and indeed, I was watching Matt on the telly last night. Matt Fry joins me now. I have little doubt you have been to Minnesota, probably on a number of occasions. Can you give me a paint-a-word picture of the city? Morning, Matt.
Good morning. It's a big industrial city in a state. Minnesota is a state. Minneapolis is a city. Mm. Minnesota is a state of thousands of islands. It's very beautiful. It's close to the Canadian border, the northern bits of it. Minneapolis is a very liberal, large city with a big university. It's Democrat, like a lot of big cities in America. It's run by a very charismatic Democrat mayor, Jacob Frey. The governor of the state of Minnesota is, of course, Tim Walz, who you'll remember ran as the vice presidential candidate in the last election. And Donald Trump has had it in for Minnesota and Minneapolis for quite a long time now. He sees it as a sort of radical liberal bastion. He was incredibly offensive a few weeks ago before Christmas about the Somali community of Minnesota, especially Minneapolis. That's where many of them are based. And 90% of them are American citizens. And he more or less told them that they were corrupt and dirty and they should go back home to Somalia, even though they are naturalized Americans. So he's kind of, you know, he's obsessed with it. There's a fraud scandal going on that's been there for quite some time that is a legitimate cause for concern. He's obsessed with that as well. However, sending ICE border agents in to sort out a fraud case doesn't really work. So he's used it as a kind of, as an example to show how far he's prepared to crack down on immigration abuses. And that, of course, has gone too far because the two killings have both happened in Minneapolis in recent weeks. Rene Good a few weeks ago, and then, of course, Alex Pretty at the weekend. These are both citizens who were described immediately by the administration as domestic terrorists. But frankly, Nick, if you wanted someone to shovel your snow or deliver your mail or help with your kids to go to school, they would be the perfect citizens to help you with that. So they picked the wrong targets. They overreacted. And part of that, briefly, is the kind of, you know, first of all, policy is performance. Performance is policy under Trump. You know, the more aggressive it looks, the better they think it might work to put people off and or to encourage what they call self-deportation. And also there's a culture of impunity now fostered by the administration that whatever you do as an ICE agent in order to bring people into detention and deport them is okay, and don't worry too much about the law.
Matt, you will have seen the stories online saying that Trump is at a bit of a crisis. We've got the midterms coming and the events in Minneapolis and across, in Minnesota across Minneapolis, Minneapolis across Minnesota, I'm sorry, offences are really knocking his poll ratings. A, do you believe that to be true? B, if so, what does he do?
I think it is true. The vast majority of the American population, including actually many Democrats, are in favour of reducing the flow of illegal migration over the border. This is something that Trump has campaigned on, and it has worked. The border, the southern border, is virtually closed. I mean, there's hardly anyone coming across compared to previous years. But what they don't like, and that includes a lot of Republicans, is if the measures used are too draconian, which is what's happened. So I think Trump has looked at the poll ratings. He has heard Republican friends in Congress, you know, in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, saying very clearly to him, and some of them publicly, if you carry on like this, we will lose our seats. Therefore, you will lose your majority and you'll be a lame duck president for the last 2 years of your term. Please rein it in. And that is what he's done now. He sent Gregory Bovino, the notorious, some would say boneheaded, you know, commander at large of the border force, back to the border where he started his job. You know, he's someone who revels in the idea that you have to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. And, Tom Homan, who's not exactly a softie, the border czar has gone up to talk to Tim Walz and Jacob Frey, the mayor of Minneapolis, to try and find a solution. So things are kind of, you know, slowly being reined in, but I don't think we're going to see a very nicely approach to immigration because that is what Trump is obsessed with. That is what he has prided himself on. He believes he has a mandate and a mission. And remember, Nick, ICE, the agency that does most of the enforcing, has a military budget that is bigger than any other military budget in the world, apart from the one for China and the US. They have a budget, after the latest big, beautiful budget, that is $174 billion. Good. That is three times the size of the UK's military budget in order to enforce the border and pick people up and detain them. I mean, you follow the money, as they say in American politics, and that's where the money is going.
All the facts that we need an interpretation to from my colleague Matt Fry. Matt, look after yourself. Thanks for that, buddy. LBC Saturday mornings from 10, and of course to be found at Channel 4 news presenter, anchor and reporter there. Okay, we might pick up on that. Let's come very much to a local event, say UK events, and that story that we heard earlier. £2 million worth of kit discovered in an HMO, House of Multiple Occupancy in Ilford. Adam, the electrician, says, my van got done in Finchley last year, around August. I had £5,000 worth of tools fitted at the time. The police said they know who the guy was. He was from Ilford, so I think my tools went there. Oh, gosh, Adam, Yep, you've got £5,000 worth of £2 million worth of tools. Steve in Southampton, hopefully going to hear better. Let's try again. Morning, Steve.
Hi, morning, Nick.
Perfect. What sort of job do you do, sir?
Groundworks and construction, mainly, and we've had thousands of pounds stolen over the year. But the people I blame for this, because a thief will steal whatever sells or whatever they can liquidate into money, is it's the people buying it downstream. They yeah. are the people that are guilty of this.
Yeah.
And I've worked with tradies who have used stolen tools, and they don't feel it's the same responsibility because they are detached from the act of the theft. So they think, but there is a way around this, Nick. There is a very simple
solution. Just tell us the sort of kit that you have. So when you say groundwork, so are we talking about chainsaws and things like that?
Oh, yeah, but right up to 2.5-ton compaction rollers.
Oh,
we
crikey.
Have one of those that's lifted out. Yeah, so some of it is well organised. We're not just talking petty, easy theft.
Yeah, okay.
But there is a very simple solution for this, Nick, is that all tools need to follow a chain of registration from new. You buy the tool, you get a small piece of paper with it with all its serial numbers, and you pass that every time you sell it, and then random site inspections need to start with a massive fine potential for anybody caught with a tool that either has a ground off serial number or anything that they can't trace back to birth.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. That will stop it. That will stop it dead.
Do you reckon, this never occurred to me, I always thought it was like DIYers who go to a Sunday market or whatever and pick up a power saw or whatever.
No.
You think most of it's within the trade, do you?
Oh, it's tradies, because that's what I've actually experienced, which I find is the worst culprit.
Of course.
They should know better. I've actually witnessed people, and obviously I wouldn't name them on here, people closer to me than I'd really want to name, friends, who have the audacity to moan when they've had stolen equipment that they bought stolen back off of them. The irony from that. And I've said to them, you are part of the cycle.
Dear, oh dear. Their stolen kit is unstolen again. Steve, good luck with the work you're doing. Thanks for your input on that. John is in Northampton. John, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you. I'm a retired police officer, and it just reminded me of a job in 2019 where I was part of a team that found a house full stolen tools similar to this. It wasn't to this value, tens of thousands of pounds, mostly small hand tools, like battery-operated hand tools.
Yeah.
And the two frustrating things about the investigation, two people were in the house at the time, got arrested. They went through the process and got a non-custodial sentence. But the main issue was that because we couldn't identify everything as stolen, the stuff that we couldn't identify as stolen, we had to give back to them.
Why were you not able to identify it as being stolen, John?
Because it just the kit wasn't marked with enough information to identify the owner. We managed to do a small part of the identify a small number of owners, but about 80% of it we couldn't identify the owners.
How big a deal is this, do you think, John?
It's huge. It's huge. It's as I say, in my time as an officer, I saw this happen many, many times. Many victims of crime, mostly traders, getting it stolen out of their vans.
And what of Steve's point, who, to use his expression, is a tradie, tradies buying other traders' stolen kit? That's about as low as you can get, isn't it?
It is. But one point on that, the definition of handling stolen goods is if you buy something that you know is massively under market value, you can be guilty of handling stolen goods.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there are things that the law can do. If you buy something.
So someone offers me a Rolex watch for £10, it's probably best not to get involved.
Absolutely, because the definition of handling stolen goods would capture you in that.
John, fascinating talking to someone who was in Law and Order. Thanks for your input. Have yourself a safe day. 10 years later this year, later this month, I'm sorry, 10 years since that Brexit vote, we'll speak to someone who campaigned actively for Remain, and of course, he lost. The impact of Brexit, you'll hear from Sir Nick Clegg. And then in the next hour, all creatures great and small. And as you may recall, we were featuring stories about vets and their soaring prices as recently as last week, or certainly this month. Now they will have to publish price lists for common treatments and say if they're independent or part of a chain. But I want to hear your stories. They're always pretty eye-watering of the thousands of pounds that you've had to either spend or, in some instances, borrow, take a loan to look after your dog, your cat, your rabbit, whatever it might be. That's in the next hour. It's 8:46 now, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years.
Hundreds of flood warnings are in place across the country after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. And speaking to LBC, a cabinet minister has rejected claims a support package for England's pubs and music venues is wholly inadequate. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells, patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M2 eastbound up to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne. It's following an accident and one lane is closed. Also, long delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 14 at Heathrow to 11 at Chertsey. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. In Essex, on the A13 westbound, the road stays closed from the Pitsea flyover to the Five Bells interchange. And this is also after an accident. In Bedfordshire, on the M1 southbound, it's very busy to Junction 12 at Those emergency works are still taking place and two lanes are closed. And on the trains, Thames Link can't run between South Croydon and East Grinstead. And that was after that track problem earlier this morning.
This is LBC.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car instead of selling privately. We Buy Any Car can get it sorted in under an hour, so no weekends watching randoms inspect your car to not even buy it. If only they could make finding where you park simpler.
Was it floor 2 or 3? I swear I parked here. Where is it?
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 9. Let's put calls to one side now and get you ready. There will be a lot of coverage later this year because it is 10 years since that Brexit vote. Obviously, later in the year, that's coming up in June. So let's go back in time and remind ourselves of one senior politician who fought long and hard to try and prevent it. former Deputy Prime Minister, leader of the Lib Dems, Sir Nick Clegg, who joins me now. Of course, he wrote How to Stop Brexit. That was one of his great titles.
And Make Britain Great Again.
Yeah, Make Britain Great Again. Yeah, yeah. He's also working on How to Win the Ashes and Boris Johnson's Guide to Fidelity. So Nick Clegg joins me in the studio now.
Yeah.
Right, 10 years on, and I need to say again, you campaigned long and hard and worked vigorously and probably certainly lost sleep and probably lost hair. How do you view Britain now?
Well, it's 10 years. It feels like a lost decade, doesn't it? Unfortunately, I think even people who, for perfectly good reasons, by the way, I don't blame people for voting for change. I can understand why they might have wanted to do so at the time. But I don't think even the most ardent sort of voter for Brexit then would, in their perhaps quieter moments, deny that all the evidence is just piling up more and more and more and more, that far from reducing red tape, it's actually led to an explosion of red tape on our exporters and our borders. It's made us less prosperous. It's arguably made us less safe because we don't cooperate as well with our neighbours on crime. It's certainly made us less influential and relevant in the affairs of the world. And I think that the fact that the younger people in particular feel that very acutely, I mean, every single survey shows massive majorities of younger people who kind of feel that a decision that was taken by the older generation, who don't have to live with the consequences, is going to penalise them the most. And that's why I think it's a good time now to just pause and reflect. If we've lost one decade, are we going to lose another one and another one and another one, just because we find it very difficult to look ourselves in the mirror and ask ourselves whether we took the right turn or not?
If you were a slightly younger man and you were in politics, would you be saying to your colleagues, why don't we actually embrace the idea? Because you're right, we were talking about people like your children, not my children. Most of my production team, they didn't have a vote in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, would you say, no, let's start actively campaigning in time, not tomorrow, to get back into Europe?
Yes. Yes. I'd actually go slightly further than that, because, you see, what's going to happen now is you're going to have lots and lots of Westminster and studios like this are going to be full of a lot of heat and fury around a student exchange here, a defence cooperation there, an energy, exchange system. It's going to be lots and lots of sort of mini debates which duck the big thing, which is like, whether you like it or not, and some people don't like it, but I'm afraid they can't change one immutable fact, which is we are geographically, tectonically, part of Europe. We're not part of the United States, we're not on that side of the Atlantic, we're on this side of the Atlantic. We are now probably more sort of friendless and more adrift as a country than we have been for 300, 400 years. Clearly, the relationship with the United States is quite, quite different to what most of us were accustomed to in the post-war period. And we've cut ourselves off from what remains one of the most prosperous, borderless markets in the world.
The growth is something like 0.2, Sir Nick.
No, if you look at a recent survey
across the EU, I should have said EU across the whole of the European Union.
So I think there are real problems in France and Germany. But if you look, The Economist recently did a survey of the top 10 performing economies in the world. Seven of them were from the European Union: Portugal, Greece.
I know Spain is doing well.
Spain's doing very well.
Although poor Denmark, bad employment, young people in employment.
Listen, all countries have their strengths and weaknesses. My point is that at the end of the day, you need to kind of decide, do you think it is important for our country, for our sovereignty? Here's the thing, for our sovereignty, for our autonomy, for our sense of pride and independence in the world, never mind good jobs, decent public services, safety on our streets and so on, is it better to be part of the club in our neck of the woods? I think it undoubtedly is. So I wouldn't, of course, say let's reopen it next Tuesday. I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, listen, the victors of that Brexit referendum have had a decade to show the benefits of their handiwork. They have failed. We all know that. All the evidence shows that it's making us poorer and weaker. Why don't we then just at least agree that the long-term destination, maybe combine it, for instance, at the time when Ukraine is going to join the European Union. Can you imagine a moment that Ukraine might join what will no doubt be a somewhat altered European Union, and we're not a leader in that club? So I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, look, the winners have had a long time. They've had a decade to show whether they could actually deliver on their milk and honey promises. They haven't.
When might my production team look forward to that vote, the younger people that we're talking about? Is it in the next 10 years, the next 5 years? When would it be?
I can't put a figure. I think in the next decade. I think it would be a tragedy if we threw away another decade. And in my view, it's very difficult for a small-ish, medium-sized, open economy like ours to do well in this world, particularly in a time of great power conflict between China, India, America, and so on, unless we are actually able to sort of stand tall and strong with our nearest neighbours.
A couple more minutes left with you. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I want to move on to other matters. But before I do, the impact of Brexit, Sir Nick, is it as bad as you thought it was going to be, or is it even worse a decade on?
I think it's worse. If you look at a recent report, for people who are interested in this, by the very accomplished and credible economic think tank called the National Bureau for Economic Research, actually an American one, they now calculate that the damage of Brexit might be as great, if not greater, than the great financial crash in 2008. So that means if you look at our recent history over the last 10, 15 years, we are almost unique as a country in the developed world to have had not just one, but two massive economic shocks.
Could I say COVID?
Everyone had to deal with that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Everyone had to deal with that.
Unique to UK.
We were somewhat unique in 2008 because the City of London was so oversized compared to the rest of our economy. Everybody dealt with, of course, 2008, but it hit us very, very hard for that reason. And Brexit was clearly a unique self-inflicted wound. So I just think in life, there's nothing wrong with saying, look, we thought this was going to turn out differently. The people who advocated have clearly failed, and they had their chance. They had, you know, they had hardline Brexiteers mm-hmm. in power: Liz Truss, Boris Johnson. When I hear Nigel Farage, who, by the way, gets away scot-free, I mean, his great achievement in life is a disaster for this country, and no one holds him to account.
Well, in what way should he be held to account, Sir Nick?
Because he's the author of this lost decade, and he's sort of preening himself as if he might be the next prime minister. And the problem is, the other parties don't want to take him on, because they don't want to talk about Brexit. It's become this sort of verboten word. In the end, countries, like individuals or families, you can't keep living a lie. This has done us tremendous damage. The people who delivered it haven't been held to account, and we have to get out of this sort of deep freeze we're in and accept that it is perfectly reasonable to say, we gave this a go, we gave the victors a go for a decade, we don't want to lose another decade for the sake of our kids and our grandkids. We should aim, over time, to go back in some shape or form, into this European club.
You're back in the UK, having been President Global Affairs at Meta. There's a lot of pressure on Meta and similar companies. There's the idea that there should be some social media ban. How much is social media out of control? You're a senior member.
Look, I think it's totally understandable why people want to introduce regulation to protect children online. I have a lot of sympathy with that. Is what's being suggested, you know, banning at 16, exactly the right thing to do? It may be. I think it's worth taking the time to look at the experience in Australia.
How did you control your own sons as they were that age?
I wouldn't control them too. I would just keep the conversation going. Everyone has to parent differently. I think it's very important to keep the conversation going. If you see your kids just drifting off and not speaking, I think then sometimes it's always worth just kind of asking a few questions. What I personally think is probably a more sensible approach, and I actually advocated this to both Labour and Conservative ministers, and was very frustrated when I was working at Silicon Valley, they didn't take it up. So you've now got this very messy arrangement in the UK here under this Online Harms Act, is that you have a ban which is watertight at 13. So no, you know, kids can't use these apps from 13 and under, and you have to, and you can make that watertight by having a age control at the moment that apps are downloaded through the app stores, the iOS and Android app stores. It's the only way you can technically do it, and it's the only way that parents can control it. And then you force all the tech companies to say that from 13 to 16, 13 to 17, you can choose your age. You can only provide kids of that age with much, much more age-appropriate things. So, in other words, they can't be communicated with by adults they don't know. There are much, much stricter limits on the content they receive. There are time limits on how much they use the app. Because if you have a ban, just imagine you're a 15 or a 16-year-old and you're a football-mad kid.
Yeah.
Or does that mean you can't look at videos of Messi scoring goals on YouTube? Really? And the danger of bans is it makes everyone feel great. We've banned something which we don't like. Of course, the effect is it will chase some youngsters into some pretty nasty recesses on the internet, which is not a great effect. So maybe look at what Australia's doing for a while and then decide.
Well, how alive are they in Silicon Valley to what Australia has done?
They
are aware.
I wouldn't worry about these companies. I mean, listen, I used to work for... I wouldn't worry about these companies. They'll just have to do what the law says. That, honestly, you shouldn't worry about them. They'll just... I mean, they should just do what they're told. I'm much more concerned is what's the right thing for kids and what does the evidence bring? There's a very interesting, you know, study came out last week from a very authoritative study from the University of Manchester, for instance. Over many, many years following thousands of kids using smartphones, they could find no evidence there was a link between the amount of time you're on smartphones and, you know, well-being and mental health and so on. So the evidence from the experts is pretty mixed. So I wouldn't worry about the company. I mean, the companies just should do what they're told by parliaments and stuff. It's are you legislating in a way that actually really has the effect that you want? That's the big question.
All right, if we're talking about people of that age, let's just get a little bit older and talk about university students. When we announced that you were coming in, a lot of people contacted me with various texts and messages, as it might be, of course, reminding you in your stance you took over tuition fees as when you were in government, in the coalition government with David Cameron. And some of the fees, Nick, now that people are paying, I've got a colleague, total borrowed in tuition fees, £53,000, current student loan debt, £72,000, repayment, £1,800, interest, £21,000, 1 year's tax alone, £4,200. I've got another one, 80,000. These kids are drowning under debt. What's happened?
Yeah, I think it's become way too complex and convoluted. It feels really, I think a lot of young people feel that they're now just running to stand still. I mean, remember,
well, they're not even standing still. They've got 8% interest in somewhere.
Yeah, but remember
this
when
is
we
making money off kids. I know you'd this is absurd, isn't it?
Yes, but I can't. It is a completely different system now to what we introduced in 2012. Then it was RPI plus 3%, but crucially, you only had to start paying back. We very much increased the point at which you had to start paying back to, I think it was 25,000.
It's 28
at the
now.
Yeah, I know. It should arguably have gone up. They froze that threshold. We introduced maintenance, meaningful maintenance grants, which the Conservatives got rid of the moment we were got rid of from Downing Street. It was a 30-year repayment thing. I think it's now 40 years. And crucially, of course, remember, the effect of that was firstly to exempt universities from austerity, from the difficult savings we had to make, which any government had to, in the post-2008 years. But also you had European students coming here paying full fees, which of course have all now been, most of them now been chased back home because of Brexit. So the situation is very different. The labour market is much tougher than it's been in recent years for graduates. So I think it is definitely worth thinking of a real overhaul now. This doesn't seem to be, the governments just seem to be tinkering rather than looking in the round about how to make university finances sustainable and make it fairer for graduates. Do you know, in an ideal world, much like pensions, much like social care, much like the triple lock, in a rational world, you would do this on a cross-party basis, because every single politician, including from Reform, knows these are kind of things which are just unbelievable. I mean, look at the sorry or the sort of checkered story of tuition fees. Actually not introduced by the coalition, it was introduced by Labour. Labour actually jacked up tuition fees, having said they wouldn't. Then we took on a report from Peter Mandelson that said there should be no upper limit. Then we, of course, increased them. Huge controversy and so on. Since then, governments haven't wanted to touch it because it's so controversial. It's a classic thing where all politicians know this is a very, very tricky thing to get right. The more they could do it together on social care, on pensions and on graduate repayments, I think the better for the country.
We're already over time. I've got to ask you, you are now general partner at Hero Capital, if I'm saying that correctly. Briefly, your ambitions now that you're back in the UK?
Look, my great sort of motivating thing is I just, having spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley and seeing the way the world is going and seeing this great
rupture. How do they view UK, Sinead?
Well, they don't. I mean, I think they sort of like, they watch Downton Abbey and they like going to holiday in the Cotswolds. I mean, don't want to sound facetious, but I mean, in the 7 years I was in Silicon Valley, I was basically never asked much about the UK, except for what did I think about Harry and Meghan, which was basically not very much. And this is something which I think people forget.
Right.
If you're in California and you've got these huge companies which are worth trillions of dollars now, which billions of people using their apps and services, their growth market is not in the UK. It's in Asia. It's in Latin America. They've got this global view. And I personally think it's high time we just get real. We are over-reliant on Uncle Sam in too many ways. Every single aspect of our digital life is now at the behest, basically, of these big American technology companies. We've got to learn to stand on our own two feet.
And that's what you're doing.
We talked about Brexit and sovereignty. I'll take the sovereignty I care about. Is I want to be able to use European and British technology, and I want my kids and my grandkids to use British and European technology, not just American and Chinese. Chinese technology. And that's one of the things that myself and my colleagues at Hero Capital are doing, is investing in the entrepreneurs of today and tomorrow who will build great businesses without, I hope, doing the normal thing of the moment they get any success, you know, going off to California because that's the only place they can get some money.
Lastly, can Europe rival Silicon Valley? Have we got the skill set and the...
Here's the frustrating thing. You've actually, by some measures now, you've got more tech startups in Europe than you do in the US. You've got lot of very bright people. You've got some amazing researchers. You've got some fantastic universities. You know what we're rubbish at? Absolutely rubbish at, is scaling stuff. We're actually rather good at inventing stuff. Brits in particular, we're very creative. We're just so bad at then making it big. That's what the Americans are very good at, the Chinese are very good at, and of course, it's very difficult to deliver big products if you're only providing them for the UK market. That's why cutting ourselves off from this great big market on our doorstep was such a silly thing to do, because that offers us the opportunity to at least go toe-to-toe with the Chinese and American tech companies over time.
We're way over time now. So good to see you. Sir Nick Clegg, thank you for coming in, reflecting on, of course, Brexit all those years ago. 6 minutes after nine. Let's get some LBC news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. He's pushing for deeper trade ties and says, like it or not, China matters for the UK. The government has been criticised for approving a new Chinese embassy in London, despite security concerns. But Shadow Business Secretary Andrew Griffiths says the timing of the trip isn't great.
When the Prime Minister is on the ropes with things like his failed Chagos deal, which has real national security implications, paying Mauritius, a Chinese ally, to take away an incredibly strategically important asset. I just think it's the wrong time for the Prime Minister to be going.
Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place across the country after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. The southwest has been worst affected. A major incident's been declared in Somerset. A cabinet minister has rejected claims a support package for England's pubs and music venues is wholly inadequate. Yesterday, the government confirmed plans to cut rates by 15% from April. Firms warned of closures and job losses after a COVID discount was removed in November's budget. But the government minister, Liz Kendall, told Nick that conversations with the hospitality sector will continue.
What we have tried to do here, the big thing in the budget was to say this: look, some of these big online companies with out-of-town facilities were charged the same rate as our amazing independent pubs and shops and cafes on the high street. We said that was wrong. We increased the so-called multiplier for those online facilities because we wanted to see a rebalancing. Is there more we can do? Yes.
Vets will have to publish their price lists as part of proposals to make the industry more transparent. The competition regulator found that pet owners aren't being given enough information about vets' fees. And every adult in the UK will be offered free AI training. The government says its courses will take less than 20 minutes to complete. They're aimed at teaching people how to use simple AI tools effectively in the workplace. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 14 at 10,222. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now. 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
9 minutes after nine on Wednesday, January the 28th. Let's get straight to my next guest as we're going to be discussing the rights or possible wrongs of cozying up to China. So Ian Duncan-Smith, Conservative MP, former leader of the Conservative Party, former cabinet minister. All right, let me apologise by coming to you so late, Sir Ian. You can blame Sir Nick Clegg, which you can probably blame for most things. He's been just telling us, of course, how we got it all so wrong 10 years ago. So I do apologise for getting late to you, but if next time you see him, blame him. Sir Ian, it's also worth mentioning you've been sanctioned by China, so you'll have a perspective. When Sir Keir Starmer says that we need to thaw our ice age relationship, how do you react? Morning, Sir Ian.
Morning, Nick. I'm astounded, really, by the man who in December said that China posed significant threats and we needed to deal with those threats. And now, having granted this super embassy to China, which is completely unnecessary, it'll be the largest embassy compound in Europe. It has, God knows, 200 rooms down below that have been redacted in terms of their purposes. They're very close to the cabling. They told us there was no problem over the cabling. They could deal with it. And then what do we hear? Once they've actually granted this permission to China, they're going to have to move the cabling now because of the threat that they pose to the cabling. So, with all the security stuff, the information, financial information flying back and forth to Canary Wharf and to the city. So domestically, he's got this very badly wrong. But when he says we'll go and thaw, what is the purpose? Because China is never going to buy much ever that we make. And what they intend to do, though, because they've had a very bad domestic economy, it crashed a few years ago, they've still carried on subsidizing their producers to produce things like electric batteries, cars, solar arrays, wind farms, you name it. And most of Europe is now worried about their dumping, but they want to have a deal with us so they can dump all of that on us, which means that we will be importing huge amounts of their goods. We'll lose the car industry because they can't compete. And remember, some of this stuff is made by, a lot of it is made by slave labor. They are financed by the central bank against the WTO rules. All of this stuff is just, without me talking about their human rights stuff, which but if you want me to, I will go right.
Can I just go on the business front, Sir Ian? And if you're right, and I'm not saying you're not, but if you're right, why is the Prime Minister accompanied by businessmen and women from AstraZeneca, BP, HSBC, Jaguar Land Rover, Intercontinental Hotels, Rolls-Royce, Standard Chartered? I could go on. There obviously is trade to be done, no, Sir Ian?
Well, it's always trade to be done with different countries, but look at what happened after the last golden era. We literally hardly sold anything that we manufactured or made over here, some pharmaceuticals, etc., but not a lot. And a lot of the pharmaceutical companies that went over there then came out, because, of course, what they discovered is China raids their IPs and then starts producing it. I talked to one particular pharmaceutical owner who said I had to get out of there because I suddenly found all the drugs that I produced, which had their licenses on, suddenly being produced as generics somewhere else in China. So the reality is China doesn't give a damn about what we want or don't want. What they want to do is paramount. And China at the moment, we build them up by this money in the course of trade. Financial services doesn't need a particular deal because they go through Hong Kong and they sell financial services. It's not a case of tariffs on them. So the point here is about goods particularly, and it's a disaster. But then if you add to that, how can you trust this organization, this country, that abuses people so badly and practices slave labor? It has forced organ harvesting. It arrests Christians who want to proceed to their worship in houses, etc. They are arrested. Many of them are tortured. You can go through the list of this. It threatens Taiwan, which would cost us $10 trillion globally if they took that. They're building up their military and their navy, thanks to our trade, etc., with them. And this is a country, by the way, that has been disdainful of the UK for a long, long time. But they want to do business with us for one major reason. They think we are the soft underbelly access to America. We have this really remarkable security arrangement with the US through GCHQ, etc. They want to get inside that as fast as they can, and I'm afraid that is their target.
Lastly, Sir Ian, so our stance towards China should be 100% foe, 0% friend.
You've always, short of war, you always end up trading with people one way or the other. That's not the point of what I'm saying. What I'm saying here is we need to have our eyes wide open. They should be in the upper tier of FIRS, the Foreign Influence Relations Scheme, which makes them, therefore, an official threat, which makes people, companies, individuals Go to them wary of what they will do. After all, this is a man, the Prime Minister, who will find that he has to get dressed inside some canopy because they are worried about being hacked. He has to have a burner phone for a man that's going over there to say he wants a new relationship because he knows they will dump everything onto his telephone. He will be watched, and everywhere he goes, he will have data being transferred back to the government. And all the time, they talk about a new relationship. The only thing new about this is the naivety of this government, desperate because their economy is in straits, thinking China will give them growth. China isn't interested in the UK's growth. They're interested in saving their own economic skin and being able to outdo America. That is the total key.
So, Ian, thanks. And apologies again for coming to you so late. So, Ian Duncan-Smith, Conservative MP, former leader of the party, former cabinet minister. So, from some newspapers now, it's no longer never hear Keir. It's kowtow Keir, as he kowtows to the Chinese. What should our position to our Chinese friends be? Also in this hour, vets bills, that's all creatures great for, those vets bills under control. I want to hear your stories of those soaring, soaring payments and costs of veterinary treatments. Just on 9:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to arrive in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. Hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place across the country after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. And the former head of global affairs at Meta, Sir Nick Clegg, has told Nick that ministers need to resist the urge to rush into a potential social media ban for under-16s. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells, some patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 14 at Heathrow to 11 at Chertsey. It was after that accident that happened earlier. Also on the motorways, it's very busy on the M1 southbound to junction 12 at Flitwick. Those emergency works are still taking place and two lanes are closed. In Greenwich, Blackwall Lane is closed northbound because of a fuel spillage and that's causing lengthy delays. Very busy again this morning on the A4 eastbound to Sutton Court Road, Chiswick, because of the roadworks. Those delays back onto the M4 onto the elevated section. On the trains, Thames Link aren't running between South Croydon and East Grinstead. It was after a track problem that happened earlier this morning. And also Southern remains suspended between Horsham and Dorking.
This is LBC.
So you're getting a new pet. You've got bedding, you've got toys, you've got a name. But have you got insurance? Well, if you've got a Tesco Club Card, you'll get a Club Card discount on Tesco Pet Insurance. And all policies include vet phone for peace of mind 24/7. Just search online for Tesco Pet Insurance. Cats and dogs aged 8 weeks or over. Vet phone provided by Vets Direct Limited. Monetary limits, excesses and exclusions apply. Arranged by Pinnacle Insurance Limited.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. Little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Idle money chills in your current account. Parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early. Automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs. Oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
So that's the opposition view as to Sir Keir Starmer's trip to China, accompanied, as I say, by businessmen and women from some of our biggest firms and, of course, parliamentary colleagues as well. One person who's not on the trip is Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology, Liz Kendall. So let's get the government line. China, friend or foe?
We should be clear-eyed and realistic about this. Our national security will always come first. And I am absolutely sure, too, that the Prime Minister will raise all sorts of issues around the human rights abuses we've seen. But we also know that China is the second largest economy in the world, and that if we can have a trading relationship that is safe, that meets our requirements on national security, when the French have been, I think it's something like four times since we last went, that, you know, Khan has been, Trump is going, if we can have that good trading relationship in a safe and secure way, I think that is in the national interest for our economy.
They were listening to Liz Truss and Boris Johnson on their mobile, God knows what they learnt from that, they were listening to their staff on their mobile phones. That can't be right.
Well, I can't comment on those national security issues. We are absolutely confident that all of that is safe, including for the Prime Minister. But we have to be clear-eyed and realistic. We need to be absolutely firm on national security and human rights. But if there are good business deals to be done in a safe way, I think that is important that we work to secure those economic partnerships in Britain's interest.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, I don't know where that last bit came from, but that was Liz Kendall speaking with me in the first hour of the show. Just to get it absolutely right, and she did say that these were figures approximately. Theresa May, the last British Prime Minister to go to Beijing, was in 2018. Subsequently, German leaders have visited four times, and President Macron of France has been three times. Sir Keir arriving 2026 is the first one since. So, for the government, you've got to be clear-eyed, you've got to be aware of the dangers, but we've got to be trading. For Sir Ian Duncan Smith, who, of course, is a member of the opposition, no, no, and thrice no. But I remind you, he has been sanctioned, of course, by the Chinese regime. John in Enfield, what is the relationship? What should be? Should we have an ice age or a golden age, and why? Good morning.
Oh, hello, hello there.
Hello.
The first thing that we should do, yeah, is once Starmer leaves the country, yeah, declare him as a persona non grata. The army should step in, diagnose this guy as a traitor and don't let him back in.
Okay, now if we can have a more logical conversation, what do you think our relationship should be, the Anglo-Sino or Sino-UK relationship be, John?
Well, they're sort of a bit, oh, you know, China is, you know, does some bad things, you see. They're going to accept this country as what's called half a friend, yeah? But shall I tell you what a half a friend does to you with the first opportunity, Nick? It stabs you in the back, yeah? Now, have you heard of Project Goal?
Project Gold?
Goal, G-O-A.
As in football, soccer goal. Goal
it's a Southampton investment by Starmer, a half a billion investment to import Chinese EVs into the country. Right. They're basically going to...
Well, they're coming in anyway, aren't they?
Europe is putting tariffs on it. It's not a fair playing ground. It's going to decimate the British car industry.
Well, we haven't got one. We only make... I mean, this is a huge generalisation. With the exception of JLR, we make cars for other people. We build Nissans, and I think we built some Renaults or Peugeots. We haven't got one.
Whatever employment we have for other countries, the Europe is putting tariffs, the UK isn't. But I'll go back to this, Nick, right? China is financing Putin's war, right? Putin is acts of terrorism on the Ukrainian people on a daily basis. They're financing that war. China last week, with the Iranian uprising and Russia, rushed in jamming equipment to bring the internet down to help the slaughter of the Iranian people. What friends... If we've got friends like that, what friends do you... What enemies do you need?
Do we have any friends? Can you point to a country with which we do, you think is correct, have a friendly relationship, lastly, John?
Well, all I can say is that when Trump talked about, you know, he decimated what the British forces did in the army, yeah? Mm-hmm. I'll counter that with the past British army has fought for our security, yeah? And you've got a Keir today, gone tomorrow Prime Minister that's trying to rob the taxpayer we're paying, Chagos, that's going to ultimately going to China, and hopefully a stop with that.
All right. John, I will leave it there because we're starting to move all around the planet literally now. Thanks, I think, for getting us started. And we will return to that. Tess, grateful. Apparently we build Vauxhalls as well as Toyotas. And, of course, thank you. Parvez, you've pointed out JLR isn't British. I think we make them here, don't we? But, of course, ultimately owned by Tata, which is an Indian company. But surely we still make cars up in Birmingham, don't we? Perhaps not in the same number that we did. I don't know. Peter, I'll talk China or Anglo-Sino relations with you in a moment. But should we get to the veterinary surgery? Now, we spoke about it certainly earlier this month and even in as recently as last week about the concern of soaring vets' bills or costs. Now the government is to propose, after consultation... Why do they have to consult over everything? And by the way, have you ever been consulted? Have you ever had a letter, an email, a phone call? Hello, I'm from the government. Can we consult you about the price of vets or whatever? I've never been consulted. Roadworks. I've never been consulted or anything. Anyway, vets will have to publish price lists for common treatments and disclose if they're independent or part of a chain. This is the government plans a major overhaul of the industry under government proposals that aim to help you as pet owners. They want you to understand what you're paying for and avoid unexpected costs and demand transparency from veterinary surgeons. Gosh. Dr. Rob Williams, president of the British Veterinary Association and an experienced vet himself specialising in small animals, joins me now. Well, these are quite some ambitions. How healthy is the vet's trade at the moment, would you say, doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. I think things are okay at the moment. We really welcome this work the government is doing to reform how vets are regulated. Your listeners won't be aware, but the laws that govern what we do are 60 years old, and they reflect a reality that doesn't exist any longer. And at the British Veterinary Association, we've been working on this for the last 10 years. So it is good that the government are giving this some attention and time.
What needs really to be addressed most rapidly, would you say, within your profession, Doctor?
I think it's just the whole modernisation of the regulatory framework. So one example, which feeds into your earlier comments, I, as an individual veterinary surgeon, I am regulated, but the veterinary practice I work in is unregulated. So veterinary businesses currently are not regulated.
Are you an independent vet, doctor?
No, I work for one of the large groups. Right. But that doesn't really matter. The fundamental point is that veterinary businesses are unregulated, and part of the proposals will change that. And that will definitely bring around, you know, about transparency and consistency and fairness. I think the other thing that's really important is, you know, the veterinary profession is so much bigger than just small animal and just pet, what we do with pets. Mm. And we make a huge contribution to society. We're involved in the production of food. Anybody who's listening to the show who's going to eat meat or consume dairy or eggs today, vets will have certified and been involved in ensuring that that food is safe for humans to consume. We're involved in scientific research, a whole range of things that are so much bigger than just pets, which obviously is an important part of what we do, but it's not the whole part of what we do.
If we look at it from the pet owner's point of view,
yeah,
the background to this say that some costs in some areas of veterinary treatment have gone up by 60% in the last couple of the year. Mm-hmm. Last couple of years. 60% hike in 2 years. Why is that, doctor?
I think it's really complicated. You know, veterinary practice does not exist in isolation from the rest of society. So the constant news stories about cost of living or the impact on the high street retailers, hospitality, that also impacts on veterinary businesses. So opening the front door of a veterinary practice every morning, unfortunately, is very expensive. Our understanding of how to diagnose and treat conditions has expanded massively over the last 20 years. So we can do more. We know more. We know how to be effective when we treat animals. And the pet-owning public, rightly in my view, have a much higher expectation of my profession than they had historically. They're more willing to do more with their pets from a medical point of view. And healthcare is expensive. Human healthcare is really expensive. And we're kind of shielded a bit from that in the UK because we have the NHS, which we pay for, all of us pay for collectively, but we don't pay every time we go to the hospital or every time we go to the GP.
No.
So there is a...
But lastly on this, one newspaper says this law will, quotes, stop the rip-off at our vet surgeries. How do you react to it being characterised, in a newspaper, by the way, as a rip-off?
I think that's really disingenuous. My colleagues provide an incredibly professional and valuable service to the public, and that sort of negative characterization and demonization of an entire profession, in my view, is entirely unacceptable.
Okay. And lastly, the idea of, if I can put it as crudely, is effectively price lists being put at the door, a bit like a menu, effectively, when you walk into a restaurant or whatever it might be. Broadly, I would have thought a good thing if I can get guidance, but yeah. And I appreciate medical, you know, I don't know when I bring my cat or my dog, and nobody actually knows until you and your colleagues, you know, get your skilled hands on it. But yeah. Broadly speaking, Nick, if we're going to have to do this to your cat or your dog, it's going to be 500 quid or whatever, yeah. Doctor.
Totally. I think anything we can do, so what we do is entirely based on trust. So if there's simple things we can do that will improve trust between me and my colleagues and the public who bring their animals to us, then we'll do that. And if that means we've got to put price lists up, of course, we'll do that. That's a simple thing we can do. And if it helps our clients and their animals, then we'll do it.
Grateful for your time, Dr. Rob Williams. Thank you. You're president of the British Veterinary Association and an experienced vet yourself. Let's just get a couple of your social media coming in. Joshua Wickham says, my dog once needed a course of medication that would last for 6 months. My vets wanted to charge £550. By getting a prescription, it was for £10, and I was able to order the exact same medication from online vet for £80. So I see the prescription cost you a tenner, then 80. So that's £90 plays £550. Isaac in Hull, which he says is the Yorkshire Riviera. I've not visited Hull, but I will read on. We paid £360 on antibiotics for a guinea pig. We would pay it again. Okay, roll up. Tell me the costs that you've had to bear for your animals or whatever it might be, from dogs and cats all the way to horses or sheep, whatever it might be. We'll get into those vets' bills in more detail. Coming up after the news, the extraordinary story of a police officer who is suing the force because they're frightened of police stations. Can I put it to you, perhaps you went into the wrong job? We'll give you more details after this. 9.31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. He's pushing for deeper trade ties and says, like it or not, China matters for the UK. Roads in Devon, Dorset and Somerset remain closed this morning because of flooding from Storm Chandra. Hundreds of flood alerts and warnings are in place across the country. And the former Deputy Prime Minister, Sir Nick Clegg, told LBC that ministers shouldn't rush into banning social media for under-16s. Sir Nick, who is also a senior boss at Meta, says any knee-jerk decisions could drive young people to access more dangerous sides of the internet. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC.
At Signature, our award-winning care homes are where luxury, comfort and peace of mind come together. With locations across London and the Home Counties, we offer exceptional residential, nursing and dementia care within five-star surroundings that feature a wealth of amenities, including our new wellness studios. To find out how you can receive an exclusive £1,000 discount with our new inclusive pricing, book a visit now at signaturecarehomes.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply.
Sounds like Arjun is going to wake up feeling fresh. And it's a good job. Because he's got a big presentation to nail just down the road. Get better sleep for your money. Book your next work stay at Premier Inn.
At Kia, we have an award-winning range of electric cars for you to discover. From the compact SUV, the Kia EV3, and our latest hatchback, the Kia EV4, to our stylish new Kia EV5, the all-electric family SUV. Discover what driving electric really means. And if you order any Kia electric car by March 31st, you'll enjoy your first two services free. Search Discover Your Kia EV to book your test drive today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
T's and C's apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
What's the most money you spent on your pet? We'll get behind the real story of those vets' bills in just a moment. But I'm asking what Anglo-Sino relationship should look like. That's the UK and China, as Sir Keir Starmer will land there later today. Of course, as Sir Ian Duncan Smith was saying, he's going to have to use a burner phone. Apparently, he's going to do all his changing and get dressed under a canopy. Theresa May, the last British Prime Minister to visit some years ago, as Prime Minister, was told that she had to get undressed and dressed under the duvet or under the covers of the bed so that no photographs were taken. Not particularly welcoming, but they would point to the trade heft of China. Peter's in Sutton. Friend or foe, China, in your view, and why? Good morning.
Good morning. I think that it's, well, we've painted China as the foe, but we need it to be our friend. But I think tomorrow, even though I don't support Keir Starmer, I think tomorrow when he's meeting with Xi, that he needs to raise the issue of Jimmy Lai. Jimmy Lai has been a UK citizen since 1996, so that was before the handover, right? And
just to remind everybody, I know you're aware of it, Mr. Lai has been arrested since 2020, held under Hong Kong's new national security law. He's 78. It is reported that he's in poor health and he's in increasingly poorer health. Peter.
Yes. So while he's there, while Keir Starmer is there as the first prime minister in 8 years, I think he needs to take the opportunity and make sure that it is heard loud and clear that we put in demands that Jimmy Lai is released. But Nick, you should know as well as I do, right? Jimmy Lai has been on camera with the likes of Pompeo, John Bolton, Mike Pence. He even said to Mike Pence in front of the cameras openly that, first of all, you should interfere in Hong Kong politics. And secondly, you can end China with your nuclear weapons in 1 second. Now imagine if there was a British tycoon or an American tycoon who went to a foreign state like Russia or China and said the same things with their leaders. What would happen? That person would come back and go to the darkest hole in Britain or America. We both know that. And yet we haven't talked about
it. What do you mean they would go to the darkest hole?
Well, they certainly wouldn't be walking around freely. They wouldn't be living in their mansion, would they? They'd be going, because if you're going to be...
Can you point to evidence to support that?
The point of evidence, well, if you go out and protest against wars now, peacefully, you can be arrested and charged for, with 14 years in prison?
Yeah, but you're not given... Yes, you are arrested. Yes, we've had pensioners carried off by four police officers, but they would argue that's so that none of the pensioners' limbs get... They're not being put away for 14 years or indefinite terms, Peter. Let's have a dash of reality here.
Okay, the dash of reality is this, right? That if we have people who are in this... what's it called? The people who were stolen mobile phones have been in prison for 20 years. But let's put that to the side. We'll just concentrate on China, right? If we talk about human rights, surely Britain, especially Ian Duncan Smith, are uniquely unqualified to speak about human rights to anybody. Look what we're doing. Have we not seen what's been going on recently? What's happened in Gaza that we support? What's happened in Venezuela? The kidnapping of a sovereign leader that we support?
Well, that was the United States that took that.
And we didn't say a word, right?
Let's go carefully with what we say about Gaza, because David Lammy, and indeed Sir Keir Starmer, is one of the world leaders who's actually supported the idea that were Benjamin Netanyahu to come here, he'd be arrested, which I think is utterly nonsensical. But he is, so I think that rather argues against your point, Peter.
About what?
The fact that if Mr. Netanyahu came here, he'd be arrested because of the international warrant.
But he hasn't, though.
He won't come here, will he? Because he knows he's going to be arrested. No, I think that one, Peter, I think you're a little... I hear what you say, but the idea that some of those folk who quite rightly protest in a country, they're not going to go for jail for 14 years. The similarity between that and Jimmy, I don't see it. Peter, I'm grateful for your input, and I'm going to end there because I don't think there's a lot of common ground, so thank you. And I appreciate your point. I respect your view, but I think you're wrong. As we speak, by the way, if it's important, Sir Keir Starmer has just landed in Beijing. Indeed, as I turn to the monitor, I'm pretty certain. Is that him coming down? I think it is. Yeah, well, certainly it's someone who looks just like him. Yeah, it does look like him. Sir Keir has arrived. No, it's Peter Carl. I do apologise. It's the business secretary coming down first. There he goes, in a grey suit. Unfortunately, there's some blurring on the vision. But they are there. The plane has safely landed. So the visit is underway. We'll come to more of your reactions on that in a moment. Warm smiles and handshakes as... There's terrible blurring on that shot. Here he is. There's Prime Minister leaving now. Okay, coming up On 9:40, as the Prime Minister lands, we come to other matters back here in the UK. And a former police officer is suing her old force, London's Met, for £1 million, claiming she has a phobia of police stations. Kirsty Coy-Martin says her mental health has been ruined by years of having to investigate crimes against children. And indeed, if she is in that condition, then we must obviously offer all sympathy. She worked in child abuse and sexual offence teams for the Met between 2005 and 2016. She's 52 now. She moved to work as a custody sergeant and later in a mostly home-based job analysing CCTV footage. Undoubtedly, some of that footage will be very distressing. She says her career ended in 2023 because of the triggering of her PTSD by everyday work experiences, including being sent paperwork with a baby's foot logo. In the end, she would suffer a panic attack simply by being told she had to go to a police station. Her lawyers say her bosses should have known she was at risk of mental ill health because of her long stint in the child abuse team and should have done more to protect her. This will be heard at Central London County Court at a later date, unless a settlement is put together ahead of that. Gillian Howard, an employment law consultant, wrote Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer, and is our go-to lawyer on matters such as these. Gillian Howard, and again, we must afford this woman all sympathy if she's going through mental health issues, but this is a spurious claim, isn't it? A police officer who can't go to a police station. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. And the answer is absolutely not. I believe this police officer has a very good chance of succeeding in her claim.
Why?
Now, the court will ask the question, was it reasonably foreseeable that this officer, who worked in child abuse for many years, might experience panic attacks when attending police stations or watching violent and disturbing videos or photographs, whether it was reasonably foreseeable she would suffer panic attacks and not be able to cope with any work for which the Met might ask her. And this, her case mirrors the leading case in the 1980s called Walker and Northumberland County Council.
Now, I knew you'd come and cite legal precedent, Gillian. You always do this to me, but come on, tell us about Walker case.
Right. Mr. Walker was a senior social worker dealing with serious child abuse cases, just like this lady. He had a nervous breakdown, was away from work for 6 months. When he came back, no one had dealt with his child abuse cases that he'd left, so he came back to a backlog of this work and new cases. He very soon had another devastating mental breakdown from which he never recovered. Now, the High Court held that the council wasn't liable for his first breakdown as it wasn't reasonably foreseeable. Evidence from his colleagues who gave evidence said he was the last person that they would ever have imagined would have had a breakdown. He was robustly, mentally very well. But the council was liable for his second breakdown because that was reasonably foreseeable and they should have had somebody else to help him with his caseload. They should have eased him in much more easily and much more sensitively. And therefore, they were reasonably, it was reasonably foreseeable.
Gillian, this will all turn on whether the Met was made aware of this woman's emotional travails, won't it? And if,
yes.
can I put it to you that if she did not make them aware, then it's faintly ludicrous to say, I can't work any longer as a police officer because I can't come to a police station, which is my place of work, if she's not made them aware.
Exactly. The report in the Times says that her lawyers said that the Met Police did know that she was at risk of suffering mental health issues because of her long service in the child abuse team, and they should have done more to protect her as a result. And I think that is the key question. You are quite right there, Nick.
There's no need to say it with such surprise in your voice, Gillian. It has happened once or twice in my life.
It has happened once or twice before. But yes, that is the key question. She will have to provide medical evidence.
Let's bring it, lastly, to a field that I know, right? And I've been in and around newsrooms for 40-plus years. Suddenly, I develop sensitivity whenever I hear of someone being, oh, I don't know, a motor accident or someone being killed or a mass shooting. I just am so distressed I have to go home and have a lie down. I've suddenly, LBC, got to provide me with my own newsroom.
No, you have a history of extremely robust mental and physical health. You have dealt with this for many, many years. I don't think LBC would be at all
liable. But this woman moved to the rank of sergeant. She worked in this field for a number of years. She was obviously very good at her job. Again, I afford her all sympathy now. She's having emotional health issues, but she was promoted. She was very good and robust at her job. What's the difference, Gillian Howard?
Well, the difference is that now employers are liable if it's reasonably foreseeable, if they should have known. And quite clearly, they should have known she had PTSD. And as long as she has evidence that as a result of her work, she'll have to provide, psychiatric
evidence.
Of course. That as a result of her work, she suffered from PTSD, then it is absolutely reasonably foreseeable that she might have panic attacks, breakdowns, and not be able to cope with the work that even she was working from home, having to look at very disturbing video footage or photographs or reading very disturbing case histories.
All right.
They should have done something about it. They should have eased her in. They should have given her work that did not require her to look at all these disturbing videos, disturbing photographs, and disturbing reports.
Gillian Howard, that's why she is so respected in her field of employment law. She's made a very good argument. I've made an average argument. Who's right? A police officer who can't go to a police station as their place of work? It will, of course, key what level her bosses were informed. Gillian Howard is an employment law consultant. The book Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer. We'll come to that. Steve, we're going to hear your vet's bill. What sort of money? Oh, my God! How much for a cat with a broken leg? That must be a typo, surely. It's 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. The government's under pressure to extend business rate supports beyond pubs and small music venues. And the former Deputy Prime Minister and senior boss at Meta, Nick Clegg, has told LBC the government shouldn't rush into banning social media for under-16s. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear to leave most places dry with sunny spells, some patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Very busy on the M1 southbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. Those emergency repair works are still taking place and two lanes are closed. Also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 14 at Heathrow to 11 at Chertsey after the accident that happened earlier. Long delays on the M4 eastbound on from the elevated section to the A4 because at Sutton Court Road in Chiswick those roadworks do continue. On the trains, Thameslink are now running again between South Croydon and East Grinstead, but there are still some delays across the network. Southern remains suspended between Horsham and Dorking. It's after that landslip that happened over the weekend. A replacement bus service is still in place.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
I've got 20 minutes to change my mind, but at the moment I want to know why Labour's leasehold legislation is a very big deal. Oh, and it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQs.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest-growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackie's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app.
18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay bi-monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
This is what you're saying about the police officer who cannot go to a police station. And again, we must afford full sympathy if she's going through emotional issues. Adam in Tatton, I'm surprised you're downplaying how horrific it must be for an officer to trawl through horrific abuse footage. Well, being a copper is an horrific job. As I think I've probably told you many times, my mum did it briefly. It's not for the faint-hearted. Tess says, put her on the beat. Put her on the beat. Give her a unit she can go to where it means you will never have to go to a police station. I don't know. How on earth is that ever going to work? Suzanne says, this is absurd. If they dismiss this man or this lady at the moment from her job because it's too stressful and she can't cope with it, but to sue them, basically, you want it both ways. She just wants to retire now with that amount of money in the bank. Well, again, we must be aware of her mental condition. We're also picking up on vets' fees as well. Neil in Skipton, £100 to be told my cat might have been stung by a wasp. They did no treatment and we were in and out in 10 minutes. Jenny says, my vets have had their prices displayed for years. It's quite standard across many practices. If you're just joining us, by the way, this is consultation from the government yet again about the idea that vets will be mandated to tell you two things. A, are they independent or owned by a big chain? B, put price lists up. Ross, £900 for an x-ray of a small dog last year. Thankfully managed to clock on. And if the clock had passed 6 p.m. that night, it would have invoked another firm to do night shifts. A whole new price list, effectively an entirely new treatment. Steve, I was going to come to you to talk about a cat with a broken leg, and I will, but Liz has come in, and I think she's paid a lot, but not as much. So let's go to Liz in Belfast. What happened to your cat? Good morning.
Morning. He was out, and he normally comes back in the mornings. He doesn't normally go out for long. He got knocked
down.
Does
he spend all night out?
No. Oh. He usually comes back, but this
one just goes
night,
for a wander and does his business. I see. Yeah. Got it.
So this one, he doesn't normally go very far. He normally doesn't leave the garden. Now we have a big wall around our garden,
right.
And he didn't come back. And this has happened a couple of times before. It was the first time that I wasn't really worried about it. And then my neighbour knocked the door the next morning and said, "Is your cat there?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness, what's happened?"
What is and the cat's name?
Parsley.
Parsley.
I didn't. I got him from a rescue centre. He came with that name.
That's fine.
So,
yeah. Okay.
So I ran down, got him, phoned my vet, said I'm on my way with the cat, have somebody ready.
Right.
And when he went in, they said his leg was broken in two places and it was £1,400. Now, I didn't. I have dogs as well. They are insured. I didn't have him insured because he didn't usually leave the garden.
Right.
So he wasn't insured. But they said to me, if he had have been insured, it would have been much more. Now, on top of that, when we got him back, you were paying £50-60 to bring him in to get it checked for months after the £1,400.
My goodness. Do we know how Parsley did this? Did he fall from a wall or get hit by a car?
They think he got knocked down and then he had tried to come home, and because I have a wall, he just, his leg was broken and he just wasn't able to get over. So he was fine apart from that, but it was just the leg. He couldn't get over the wall with the broken leg.
So
he was
landing.
Oh, he completely came around. Now, they did offer me the first £400 or £500 cheaper to take the leg off. And obviously we weren't going to do that, but because he is fully recovered now. So we weren't going to take the leg off. That was just not going to happen.
You'd have thought the vet, well, I suppose they did say, I mean, did they put it quite, you know, politely, or did they say, hey, we can take £500 off if we take the cat's leg?
No, they kind of said these are the options.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
We can put him to sleep, which we wouldn't recommend.
No.
We do think he can make a full recovery. It was going to be £200 to put him to sleep.
Right, £1,400 to save Parsley, £900 to chop, no, maybe minus a leg, £200 to put him to sleep. Parsley lives and is still with us. Liz, look after Parsley and all the dogs. How many dogs you got?
6 years ago.
How many dogs you got?
Two border collies.
Two border collies. Look after them all. Liz, thanks for your call. Good hearing from you. Now, £1,400 seems a lot, but Steve in Warrington is going to trump that. Good morning. What's the name of your cat?
She's called Luna.
Luna. That's so interesting. The front page of the Daily Telegraph. Pet owners appear to be abandoning traditional names in favour of those more commonly associated with humans. Topping the list are Poppy, Luna and Willow, instead of, for dogs, Lassie and Fido. So there we are, we're speaking about Luna. You've covered two stories in one. What did Luna do?
Well, Luna unfortunately broke her leg twice. So first time she got clipped by a car and broke what would be the equivalent of our elbow, which needed pinning and, you know, very high-level surgery.
So
that cost just over £7,000. Thankfully, we were insured for the first
£4,000. Gosh.
Yeah.
How long did it take Luna to get back on the mend, to be fully recover?
In all, probably about 16 weeks. So we had to buy a crate. She had to be in a crate in the house. And no movement and stuff like that. So that was a long process. And we were actually, at the time, we were selling our house. So people who were coming to view our house had to walk in, and in the lounge in the corner was our cat in a crate. And it good selling point, actually.
All right, if I sell a house, I'll remember it. But you said that time. What happened next then?
Well, next time, well, thankfully, her insurance had just renewed in September, and they're not sure, but they think she got a paw trapped while she was hunting something.
Right.
So she had to have she broke her paw, our knuckles. Now, that one cost £7,000, but just someone said something before, the reason why that cost probably more than it should have done is we had to take it to an out-of-hours vet.
I see.
By the time we got in and she'd been x-rayed, that nearly cost me a grand.
She's nothing but trouble, this Luna.
No, everyone jokes and turns around and says, you must really love this cat. Now, my wife and daughter do, but I'm not sure if I've got love anymore. But
what colour is Luna?
She's a tortoiseshell, so she's got what's classically called tortitude, so she's very mischievous.
You love her, really, don't you? I know this money had to come out of your bank, but you do love Luna.
I do love Luna, but I'm not loving the credit card bill I'm still paying off at the moment, Nick, for the second one. But, yeah, it's...
You've got a happy wife, you've got a happy family, you've got Luna. Look at it that way. Thanks very much, Steve. Take it easy. We've got time, if we're quick, to fit in. Anna in Wandsworth. Anna, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. I had a Jack Russell called Alf. We paid £20 for him.
He
cost
us
£10,000 in 1994 in vet bills as a one-off payment.
How did that happen?
He licked the wallpaper we were stripping from our home, and it had lead in the glue.
Do you know, I was just going to say, was it on lead paint or lead something?
Which is very, very difficult to detect. So he had to go to the Queen Mother's Hospital. And his last legs. He was five. They said, when they sorted it out, they said, he won't live long, and he lived till 20.
How
worth
incredible.
Every penny.
And went to a general hospital then?
No, the Queen Mother's Veterinary Clinic.
I'm so sorry, I misheard you. Okay.
Yeah.
What sort of treatment did he need? Because effectively, the dog's
it's
poisoned...
Hard to treat.
The dog's poisoned itself, effectively, isn't it?
Well, it has, but what was difficult was finding out what was wrong with him while his organs were closing down, which happened very quickly. And I can't remember how they actually treated him, but the key thing is, they found it, but it was through endless ultrasounds and
pounds. That's
MRI scans. Yeah.
That's probably about 15 now, if not higher, actually, isn't
it? I think about 25.
25,000. Aye, aye. You were the last voice. Anna, be well. Thank you very much. Have a good day. We're done. Should tell you tomorrow, obviously, we'll be looking at the first day of Sir Keir Starmer's visit to China, see what that does or does not achieve. Much to discuss there. But that's it for today. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it from me. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be doing it again tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I wonder, of all the things that you have heard me say this week, forgive my presumption, which do you think has received the most plentiful and pertinent complaints? I don't think you'd guess it. Well, maybe you would if you were one of the people that sent in the complaint, but I don't otherwise think you'd guess it in a million years. When I said yesterday to you that Labour's legislation regarding leaseholds was the perfect example of a story that was important but not very talkable, not very sexy, if you prefer, I said it, as I say everything to you, in good faith. But you got very, very cross with me. The subject appears to be considerably more febrile than I understood. And you're about to find out why.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. He's due to meet business leaders before talks with President Xi Jinping on Thursday. Sir Keir has stressed the importance of rebooting Britain's relationship with China. But Luke de Pulford from the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China says Sir Keir should exercise caution.
It's massive cyber espionage operations and influence operations in the UK. It's biggest military build-up in history and threatening of Taiwan, so many other aspects to China's behaviour right now, which really necessitate that the UK has a bit more of a realistic position when it comes to engaging with them.
Roads in Devon, Dorset and Somerset remain closed this morning because of flooding from Storm Chandra. Dozens of flood alerts and warnings are in place across the country. Ministers have moved to defend a new support package for England's pubs and small music venues. Yesterday, the government confirmed plans to cut business rates by 15% from April. Hospitality leaders say the measures are inadequate and excludes the likes of cafes and hotels. But speaking to LBC, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves says conversations will continue.
We have listened to the industry. We have worked really closely with the industry over the last few weeks. The industry are concerned around the methodology that was used to provide those valuations, which is why we've put in this additional support for pubs and have committed to look at the methodology for both pubs and for hotels too.
The former Deputy Prime Minister, Sir Nick Clegg, has told LBC that ministers shouldn't rush into banning social media for under-16s. It's something that the government is currently consulting on. Sir Nick, who was a senior boss at Meta until last year, said that he suggested an idea that he believes allows for greater flexibility.
I actually advocated this to both Labour and Conservative ministers, and you have a ban which is watertight at 13, and you can make that watertight by having an age control at the moment that apps are downloaded. It's the only way that parents can control it. And then you force all the tech companies to say that from 13 to 16, you can only provide kids of that age with much, much more age-appropriate things.
And vets will have to publish their price lists as part of proposals to make the industry more transparent. The competition regulator found that pet owners aren't being given enough information about vet fees. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 31 at 10,176. The pound buys $1.37 and a euro 14. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
iPhone 17 Pro. The most powerful iPhone ever. With the ultimate pro camera system. Get iPhone 17 Pro and save up to £432. Plus, roam freely in the EU, up to 25 gig. What's not to love? Search O2 January sale. O2, essential for living.
Ends 4th of Feb, £432 via £12 discount over 36 months on selected plans. Roaming up to 25 gig, then bolt-on required. Credit provided by Telefonica UK Limited. Time supply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Okay, I'm going to need your help with this. So, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. Two things that you may have taken away from yesterday. Well, several things you may have taken away. But I talked about an addiction to drama, didn't I? And the difficulties that we have returning to normality. I don't want to be premature. Events in the United States of America continue to be profoundly alarming and deeply, inarguably fascistic. We will no doubt be catching up. I think Simon Marks is due to join us in the final hour of the programme, so we'll definitely be catching up with events there. And Donald Trump's pleas to people to be hideous towards the Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have in the last couple of hours been realised after she was attacked by a man who threw chemicals at her. So you can see what's going on. But the importance, is it, or the difficulty of coming back to topics that are relevant and interesting and important but are not epochal. That, actually, I might just dwell on that for a moment, if you'd allow me. It's, and I know you indulge me very, very much. You're very, very kind when I talk to you about the so-called difficulties of doing this job. Talk about first world. What is it you do exactly? Yeah, I come to work and then I talk and then I go home. And that's it, really. We've got a lot of building work going on in the office building at the moment, in the studio buildings. And you see these mostly chaps doing things that are just extraordinary, like, you know, climbing through holes into lift shafts and incredible stuff. Come the apocalypse, I don't know that there's going to be much call for people like me. Maybe if I write a few poems or something like that to keep us entertained around the campfire. But if you can't build stuff, then come the apocalypse. I remember being in Marrakesh a million years ago, and I went into the souk, the sort of market area, the Medina. What's the difference between a souk and a medina? Ilhan Omar, forgive me, not Alexander Ocasio-Cortez. More on that shortly. You have the stalls in the medina. There was a bloke doing metal work, literally melting metal in a bowl and making stuff out of it. And this was only about 10 years ago. I remember standing there. I was hypnotised by what he was doing, just thinking, flipping heck, that there is a skill that is, you know, the difference between a vaguely civilized society and a completely uncivilized society. What happened if we didn't know how to make things out of metal? Sadly, the most obvious thing you can think of is probably weapons. But doing actual metal work. I've got no idea where I'm going with this either. But it is important, because I was thinking about the different natures of labor. So the difficulties of doing this job are not things that I expect you to stay awake at night worrying about, or indeed sending me support and succor via the various messages. What I do know is that the events that are huge are the easy bits to do. When you see the United States of America descending into fascism, when you see people being murdered in cold blood on the streets by officers of law and order. We've seen it in Beijing, and we've seen it in Tehran, and now we've seen it in Minneapolis. And I don't make those parallels lightly. You can tell from that simple sentence there, or indeed three sentences, depending on how you punctuate. We have seen it in Tehran, we have seen it in Beijing, we have seen it in Kabul, and we have seen it in Minneapolis. Forces of law and order, state-sanctioned forces, murdering civilians and citizens, entirely innocent civilians and citizens, in cold blood. That's without even getting into the abduction of children and the disappearing of people who have had the audacity to appear on the streets of the United States of America with brown skin. So that's easy, but you can't do it every day. And the challenge that the government has, of course, is, well played to Wouter, points out that the difference between a souk and a medina is that a medina is usually funky and cold. That's probably the best text I'm going to get all year, isn't it? I mean, no one's going to beat that text. If you don't get it, you don't get it. But if you do get it, you got it. Well played. I mean, absolutely well played. And yesterday I said to you that the government, which we're constantly... I know, I've realised something else as well. In that I think I try harder to be positive about governments I don't like than governments I do like. I've got this weird, whatever the opposite of footballification is. So in order to prove how even-handed and fair I am, I will talk about regimes or administrations I don't like finally doing so. I think I was at my worst on that during COVID. I was so desperate for them to get something right that when it looked for 10 seconds like they might have done, I was all over it. When Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister, when he gave that speech that appeared to recognise the horrors that had preceded him in Boris Johnson's administration, I was all over it. You gave me a right old coating for that. 6 hours it lasted before he put Suella Braverman back in the Home Office, and you suddenly realise that all of your warm words... It's where the curse of O'Brien comes from, isn't it? When I say nice things about a Tory...